It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Once again, the stream is streaming, the recording is recording, the bits are passing, the packets are passing, and here we are on the 27th day of August, 2020. This is the Horn headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where we keep the madcap, merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza tucked away. Horn chat room, the best way, if you're listening to the program live, the very best way to make your listening experience even better. You know, live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between, that's Central and Mountain, and all time zones on either end, the great globe around. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob. And if you pop on by right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky. And they'll be mighty happy to see you. Yes. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, dear God, let it end. Please let it end. Mercifully, tonight, the Cool Kids Conclave. Each word spelled with a capital K. Otherwise known as the Republican National Convention, comes to a close with a harrowing, I'm sure, speech from the most brain-damaged president ever to occupy the Oval Office. I'm talking, of course, about Nitwit Nero, COVID Caligula, Corona Claudius, Julius Geezer, Geezer Disgustus, Viral Vespasian, Marcus Aurelius, etc., etc., etc. Donald Trump. Oh, I can wait to hear his burbling madness. But, well, yes, exactly, Sparky. You'll want some Johnson's Eye Bleach for when the goggles do nothing. I just figure I'll pour a. I'll pour about 20 gallons into our Coleman camp shower. Yes, yes, absolutely. Randy in PA says, don't forget President Putz. That too. I figure I'll pour about 20 gallons into our Coleman camp shower and just suspend it from a tree branch and stand under it the entire time and just let the eye bleach wash over me during the entirety of the burbling madness that will be his acceptance speech.
And I do understand that if I am unable to fulfill the duties of Miss America, that the first runner-up, Mike Pence, will complete my reign for me.
Last night was kind of a let down insofar as while everything was it was just like the previous two nights, it was anything not involving a pronoun was a fucking lie. It was Mike Pencil Neck Geek, the sage of the Indiana airwaves. And, well, he's just not, he's not convincing. And the evil just glows off of him. It reminds me, and it was many years ago now, we were in Washington, D.C. working on the AIC Act. And there's this little spot to the side of the Capitol where quite frequently, and you've seen many members of the House do it, it's the House side, and there's just this little spot that's handy for having outdoor news conferences. And I remember one day walking by, and there stood Mike Pencil Neck Geek yakking into a microphone with his Race Bannon helmet hair atop his head. I looked at my buddy Bo and I said, I'll give you the last dollar in my damn wallet if he's not over there blathering about fetuses. Bo looked at me and said, make it a beer and you're on. I said, all right. So later in the day, we sat down to watch the news. Sure enough, there was the coverage, and there was Mike Pence, old neck geek, bleeding and blurting and hooting and braying and grunting about the precious little fetuses. And Bo, good sport that he is, looked at the bartender and says, just put another beer right next to the one he's got. Looks at me and says, how do you know this shit? I said, years and years of study, brother. Hard, hard study. Suffering, even. Hey, thanks very kindly to Jeremy for getting us started this evening. That's mighty helpful. Thank you, Jeremy. That means that, for this week, you know, last night we managed to finish off, Monday. So, and we got down to 385. So that means we're at 585 this evening, if my calculations are correct. $585 to come even with the week. And every program here at the Horn does, in fact, begin with gratitude. And so thanks go out this evening in particular to our buddy Robert in Australia. Thank you very much indeed, Robert. With any luck, we will finish August to the good. Remember, if we can finish this week, we know that Irish Dave has covered the 31st day of August, and we'll have, if we finish this week, we will have one day of fundraising free radio, and what a glorious day that will be. So anybody wanting to jump in is mighty, mighty welcome to. It makes the Friday on the Front Porch community made miracle a little less difficult to obtain. Darlene in Connecticut with a note says, and until now, I thought George W. Bush was the most brain-damaged president we've ever had. So I guess Trump has achieved something in the way of success. Yes, it's fainting with damn praise to say that he's the most brain-damaged president we've ever had, but there we are, and there we have it. And that's not to say that George W. Bush wasn't awful, because so many of the problems we face today, we face because of things that were done by the Republicans in the past, because they're just so goddamned awful. Watching Laura come ashore, it was hard not to take note that it was 15 years ago this month that Katrina came ashore. and George W. Bush stood there at a birthday party for him in Arizona, holding a guitar upside down, much as he had held my pet goat upside down on September 11th, 2001. No, I'm not going to let us forget that. We dare not forget it. But much as he had held that guitar upside down in his birthday celebration or some shit like that, and went on to say, "You've done a heck of a job, Brownie." As bodies floated face down in the fetid, stinking, poisonous waters of an inundated New Orleans. A New Orleans that's dodged a couple of bullets this month between Marco and Laura. I say dodged bullets because the Army Corps of Engineers only built the levees back to Cat 3, not the Cat 5 that they can damned well expect, and for which innocent people will eventually pay with their lives. But Laura came ashore in Lake Charles, Louisiana, with a storm surge, something on the order of 11 to 12 feet, torrential rains that fell on Shreveport and Bossier City. I sure hope Jack's okay. It'd be nice if Jack had electricity and could internet and could check in and say, "Hey y'all, I'm okay." If you're listening, Jack, please let us know. A dear friend of mine who is a professor in Natchitoches was getting ready to get whacked by Laura. Had done things that people who have to live with hurricanes often do. Had cleaned and sanitized and filled the bathtub with cold water. Had put jugs of ice, of water in the freezer to freeze to help keep anything in the freezer from going bad during the power outages. And had a thermometer in the fridge to make sure that everything stayed at 40 or lower. And when these things happen, of course, it's a reminder that climate change, as I said in yesterday's program, nature still bats last, even when the humans are busy having a pandemic. But if we had a decentralized power grid, and if everyone had batteries and solar panels, those 500,000 people probably would not be without electricity. But here we are, and there it is. That may be the theme for this evening. Angelo writes from the People's Republic of the Bronx, "I disagree. I don't think if Trump loses, he'll have to be removed from the White House. I think he'll be the first ex-president to escape to asylum in Mother Russia. There will be too many subpoenas and indictments waiting for him. He's facing jail time and financial ruin." Well, we need the financial ruin to extend past him and to his vile, filthy spawn. You know, the Constitution says that no treason shall work a corruption of the blood, which means that nobody gets punished for something that Daddy did. That, of course, does not mean that others who commit treason in the family are not also punishable. Not since that little dust-up of some, 169 years ago, have we, But not since then have we seen entire families commit treason against the United States. We had to wait those century and a half to see the rise of the Trump mob. Right. Oh, well, thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island. This would get us a long way down the road. This evening, we have a $200 challenge on the table. Because, remember, I said $585. Well, Charlene will double the first $200 that come in. Okay? So that would take us down to $185. Then, if that challenge is met, Charlene will throw in an extra $50. And that'll take us down to $135, making for a manageable $335 community-made miracle on Friday on the front porch. So please don't let Charlene's challenge go by the boards. Please don't. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very much indeed. Riots asks Steve in New York. I've been thinking an awful lot of what's been going on in Kenosha. I've seen an awful lot of news about burning buildings, vandalism, and other kinds of wrong activities. In commenting on the riots, I've seen a number of people opining about the legitimate forms of protest. That the fires, breaking windows, etc. are in fact not protests, but are riots. I've seen people lamenting property damage as a result. What's really struck me is that most of the voices for ending the riots and legitimate protest are the talking heads. I mean, white talking heads in the media. Yet I've also seen family after family of the victims of police murders showing grace, forgiveness, and love for this country and calling for an end to the riots. I've seen these same families saying the victims don't want or wouldn't have wanted these riots to stop. I can't help but wonder if these black families feel an obligation to say that. Why do I say this? Let's assume that the protesters, and not the infiltrators and 17-year-old vigilantes of the world, have committed these acts. I have a hard time insisting they stop the violence. I have a hard time even commenting on this. I simply don't have the right to say or think that these riots, fires, etc., again, even assuming that they're the work of the protesters, are illegitimate. Why do I say this? Because what's going on feels an awful lot like people who are sick and tired of waiting for reform. It feels like a situation where even after George Floyd, a sick and tired people are saying, clearly you didn't hear us when we marched and protested peacefully. You continued to shoot non-lethal bullets at us. You tear gassed us. You beat us. And remember, let's not, I tell you, please, this is just an editorial comment, not directed specifically at Steve, but at all of us when we talk about this issue. Can we please stop saying tear gassed? That makes it sound like that there's some sort of mist that they put into the air and it's like the police come up and just start chopping onions and blowing it with a fan toward the protesters. Please, 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 pretty please, can we refer to this for what it is? It is law enforcement using chemical weapons. I've said this before, but it really needs to stick. We need to change the fucking language on this one. It's not protesters were tear gassed. It's law enforcement used chemical weapons banned the world over in warfare against unarmed civilians. So, please. Anyway, you tear gassed us, you beat us, then you shot another one of us in the back 7 times while he was getting into his car. You simply won't listen. We have no choice but to make you listen. Again, let's be clear, I'm writing on the assumption that at least some of the protesters have burned buildings, etc. Not necessarily. Steve is putting this for the sake of argument, not as an assertion of fact. This quotation from MLK's speech at the March on Washington, you know, the speech that has the one line that right-wingers know that MLK spoke, has continuously come to mind. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. This one. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights,
well, when will you be satisfied?
We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Steve continues and says, I understand what John Lewis and Dr. King and so many others have said, that peaceful protests are the only way. However, Dr. King also said that a riot is the language of the unheard. It was with this all in mind that I feel unqualified to call for an end to riots, again assuming it is the legitimate protesters who are committing at least some of the riotous acts. I just don't have the right to preach and wave my white finger at people who are speaking the language of the unheard. Hear, hear. And frankly, nor does anyone. Because, frankly, anyone who has not spoken up and spoken out against racial inequality, against racial injustice, against systemic racism, is, to one extent or another, complicit in the scenario that has brought us to this moment in time. Yeah. So, and we can learn about all of this simply by watching how the racists and the maggots, that's a Venn diagram that's a single circle, by the way, respond in their own right. And we'll get into that here in a little bit. Good. We just heard from Jack in Shreveport. Thanks for asking. Yes, I'm doing okay. Surprisingly, I've had only a few power glitches that caused everything I have to reboot or need to be set up again. I'm hoping everything will continue working and only some light rain will continue. Sorry, sneezing fit. However, a really huge limb is hanging off a tall tree, and there's a couple of other large limbs that fell. Thankfully, nothing fell on the house or carport or a car. Lawn furniture, etc., had been put somewhere secure. But we had some strong winds and hard rain. No flooding in the house here, but there are vulnerable areas near here. I haven't seen reports yet. I'm feeling pretty lucky. Stay that way, Jack. Stay that way. There are 4 deaths now so far attributed to Hurricane Laura. The first one announced was a 14-year-old girl who lived in a house that had a tree fall on it. Mercy. And just a reminder, Joe Biden does have climate change in his platform. Will it be enough? Probably not. But then again, I don't think if a genetic golem made up of Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Dennis Kucinich, and the reanimated racist corpse of John Muir were to be president, we could do enough. But we have to try to do something. Because the clock is ticking. and it's ticking faster and faster and faster. Thank you very kindly to Women Standing. Thank you so much. That takes us down to 175 on Charlene's challenge. Kevin went from there down to 145. Thank you, Kevin. We're off and running. That's most helpful. Oh, and by the way, according to the Chicago Sun-Times article that Jude just sent, Kenosha police shooting victim Jacob Blake handcuffed to hospital bed, according to his father. Jude noting, this is exactly why we stand, along with the thousands of others, each in our own way, and will continue to do so. Imagine the indignity of that. The thugs in Milwaukee have handcuffed Jacob Blake, a man unable to walk. They have handcuffed him to his bed. His father, Jacob Blake Sr., said, I hate it that he was laying in that bed with the handcuff onto the bed. He can't go anywhere. Why do you have him cuffed to the bed? And he had another question about his son. What was he arrested for? Well, the Kenosha Police Department, the state of Wisconsin, are saying, well, you know, we found a knife in his car. Possession of a knife is not justification for shooting someone seven times in the back. Because if they've got their back to you, they're no threat to you with the knife in their front. By the way, the cop who shot Jacob Blake seven times in the back, well, he has a previous history. Because of another case he was involved in, there was a $50,000 payout, civil settlement, based on his behavior. Jesus. Jacob Blake still hasn't heard from the police department, the Kenosha Police Department, or Mayor John Antaramian. Although Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has reached out to him. The hell is he under arrest for? Lord God, Billy Bob. Isn't that just revolting? And isn't it entirely too typical. No surprise at all. Another note coming in from Joey. Subject line, cognitive dissonance. Watching the shit show last night was not as bad as I thought it would be, although Giraffe kept falling off the couch laughing. Or maybe I was knocking him off the couch because I was laughing so hard. Cognitive dissonance was the only thing I could think of as I watched the repulsive Republicans say one thing, all the while knowing the exact opposite to be true. The one speech that really caught my conscience was Kaylee Maganini, revealing her double mastectomy operation, and how happy she was that she was working for a president that would advocate for everybody being able to have whatever medical attention was necessary. At that point, Giraffe gyrated, being a giraffe, he can do that, and had a little accident on the couch. Maybe that was me. Well, anyhow, Ms. Kaylee, since you are a Rhodes Scholar, literally. Yeah, I know, and... Oh, Mike Pence graduated first in his class at West Point. Oh, those kidders. please explain to us how this is possible when this very president is being represented in court now by legal bandits who are attempting to dismantle Obamacare. You know, Kaylee, the program that actually would provide care for all people no matter their medical circumstances. Well, some of all people. Here's a gap you can drop about 27 million Americans through between the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid expansion, I would know. Kaylee, you know what you said last night was bullshit. Shame on you. So tell me, Miss Kaylee, are you really a Rhodes Scholar or just a roady-toady for this president? However, there is a general theme here from the Republicans, and that would be, I got mine, the hell with you. Actually, Joey is Igamfu. I learned that from a proud Wisconsinian, Bruce, whom we remember at the first of every month. Igamfu. I got mine. Fuck you. And he would say that in regard to, we'd be on the back roads of Wisconsin when I was traveling with him. And you'd see some sort of Republican sign. Usually in that era, it was a sign for Snot Walker. And he'd say, look there, Bob. Right there's a Wisconsin farmer who's got enough money stashed away to think that he's a Republican. Poor, stupid fucker. Precisely. Then there was Melanoma walking down the corridor holding hands with her husband. Some might say she's a victim of Stockholm Syndrome, as she looks quite captivating as she's being held captive by this beast. Giraffrey immediately went to the piano and started playing Beauty and the Beast. I had no idea Giraffrey. I'm not surprised, though, but I had no idea Giraffrey was so talented. However, I assure you, Melanoma does not have Stockholm Syndrome, but rather stock market syndrome. Oh, wait. Because she knows how the game works. And following the November 3rd election, she'll have her own cognitive dissonance of Trump the Tramp. Oh, no, please, not a Disney's Lady and the Tramp image. Now I've got... Ah, damn it, Joey! Now I've got the image of Trump and Melanoma leaning across over a plate of spaghetti with meatballs, each sucking up the same strand of spaghetti from different angles until they get close to the... Oh, no, that darling image from that Disney animated... Oh, shit! Imagine how she felt having to engage that right hand of that beast, knowing full well just days ago that hand signed a financial document that paid court costs for the Stormy Daniels incident. I felt sorry for her 16-year-old son, who's actually the man of the house, having to break this news of the court appearance to his mother. Always sad when a child has to be the baron of bad news to a parent. Baron of bad news? Huh? What? Yeah. This has been Joey's Journal for Thursday, the 27th day of August, 2020, with Giraffrey at the piano playing The Lady is Not a Tramp. Well, I'm not so sure. I loved that part of her address a couple of nights ago when she said, I grow up small black child in communist country and dream of someday coming to America to study my favorite subject of fashion, the Model Inc. All right. Let's see here. And thank you very kindly to Ralphs in Wisconsin. That means we're down to 135 to go on Charlene's challenge. Tremendous, tremendous, most helpful. Thank you, Ralphs. When I think about Jacob Blake being handcuffed to his hospital bed, it reminds me of Billie Holiday. They handcuffed her to her bed, too. Stephen, New York, pointing out, chained, not just handcuffed to the bed, and the family still calls for peace. Black people are supernaturally forgiving and peaceful in this country. They're superhuman. It's that simple. I'm not the person to go down this road because I'm not nearly enough of a scholar on the issue. But I have read others who are, who say that that's all they have. Because the minute you start advocating violence, you get dead in a straight-up hurry. And there's plenty of examples. Because even when you advocate peace, you still wind up getting dead in a straight-up hurry. So, it is a multi-layered issue. Jeremy in Vermont says, police shootings. Why in the fuck, Bob, does it so often happen that when a cop shoots someone or kills them, it's not their first shooting and often have had to pay out for a previous incident? Well, for starters, because you get mulligans, I guess, in cop land, cop world. And in some cases, mulligan after mulligan after mulligan after mulligan after mulligan until, you know, you get to the end of the round and you're actually playing par golf. That's part of it. And the other part of it is that the department never actually feels the pain of the financial settlement. That's for an insurance company. Now, in so many instances, because we are a capitalist country, insurance companies could change this issue almost overnight. Stop insuring police departments. Think about that. Stop insuring police departments. When a cop kills somebody, and when they get sued, and when judgment is entered against them, there's no insurance company to step in and write the check. Now, that would be hard on the victim's family. But the victim's family's lawyer then gets to go about the business of collecting and executing on the judgment. That means having to do things like sell police cruisers, cut back on staff, attach the tax revenues that go to support a department. Because as it is, there's no consequence for a police department whose officers engage in lawless behavior. That's a possible solution. Because, see, it's not like the insurance industry has never done that before. In fact, at one point in time, I remember after the Redneck Riviera of the Gulf Coast had been slammed successively by devastating hurricanes, all the insurance companies got together and said, hey, we are not going to write for this area anymore. If you are stupid enough to build a house here, you're going to do it understanding that you are going to absorb all the losses. But what happens is that the state's insurance commissions, which usually the state insurance commissioner is a former executive of some godforsaken insurance company, well, they'll work out a deal. Because technically the legislature could instruct the insurance commissioner to not allow whatever kind of insurance to be sold. But in reality, we could, police departments would shit themselves if they knew that the cops themselves and the departments themselves were going to be directly and financially liable every time they committed one of these atrocities. maybe that's something we'll talk about later in the program around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable tomorrow evening. It's the same thing with gun violence. We've talked about this in the past. If every good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexual gun owner was forced to carry $1 million liability policy, it would change gun ownership dramatically. And see, that could be part of the well-regulated language from the Second Amendment. In fact, it makes so much sense that it's almost de facto part of well-regulated. In fact, in almost every jurisdiction, if not every, part of having a well-regulated driver's licensing system requires that every vehicle on the road be insured against damage that the driver thereof might cause with that deadly instrumentality. These are not insoluble problems. And I know that defund the police is the vogue of the day, the vogue idea of the day, and we know what that means. It doesn't mean there aren't going to be any more police budgets. But I honestly think that if the... come on, let's be real. If the wealthy white people who run the vast majority of insurance companies, the wealthy white men, if they decided that they were sick and fucking tired of paying out huge settlements to African-American families after cops either kill or maim them, the problem of police shootings would be addressed quickly. Nope, sorry. You're not going to have any insurance until you take their fucking guns away. That's broad, but it's the kind of idea that's at work. And in every other area of civic life, that is referred to as risk management. And not only is it not frowned upon, it is actively encouraged. Steve in New York just sent me an article from Bloomberg. How cities offload the cost of police brutality. Cities spend tens of millions of dollars on lawsuits over police violence and killings, but municipalities are effectively using residents to mortgage the cost. Some municipalities have it, some don't. But there is no doubt that there is an insurance aspect to all of this. Brother Deacon Asa with a suggestion says, I think we need to start naming these destructive hurricanes after pig fuckers, seeing that it's mostly on them that we can't take any action to abate climate change. Let's start with the most recent. We'll call them Hurricane Marco Rubio and Hurricane Laura Pickles Bush. What say you? Name your town if you need to opine, a la Bill O'Reilly. Name your town if you need to opine. I think there's enough Republicans to go around it. Well, let's see. Marco was an M storm. That could have been Hurricane McConnell. Hurricane Laura. Lankford, Oklahoma. Jim, Hurricane Lankford. By God, I think a brother Deacon's onto something here. Absolutely. Billable Rick says, mulligans for cops. I believe the rule is that cops get one mulligan for every 9 holes, like amateur golfers get. So what does 9 holes consist of in Coplandia? I'm not sure, but it could be that cops get to assault one black man every year so long as they don't kill or paralyze him. Or at least that appears to be the rule in racist Kenosha, where the cops know every long gun vigilante by name and throw water to them. That reminds me of the bar in Cheers, where everybody knows your name. Making your way through Kenosha today takes everything you got. Let's not go any further with that. Flavio says, strange dream last night. Last night I dreamt I was in a building chasing after Tucker Carlson, and the little coward was running away from me. I wanted to get my hands on him. I wanted to pummel him to a pulp. I fell asleep listening to the radio, and it must have been announced overnight that he had defended Kyle Rittenhouse on Fox, or on the BBC, or WCPT Chicago, or KTNF in Minneapolis. He was running away from me. He could tell I was pissed. I don't remember if I caught up to him. Well, let's go ahead and deal with this. Because in a vile time, Tucker Carlson went right to the head of the class where vileness is concerned. Because in point of fact, he not only defended, but he praised. He praised Kyle Rittenhouse. This is the kind of thing, this is the reason we refer to Fox as Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. During the horrors of the Rwandan genocide, Radio Rwanda put out a constant broadcast stream of incitement and information to make the genocide worse. Here's just a clip of Tucker's ongoing attacks on Black Lives Matter. Because, of course, he's a white supremacist.
You are not allowed to question Black Lives Matter in any way. Full stop. But it is definitely not about Black Lives. And remember that when they come for you, and at this rate they will. Mobs of violent cretins have burned our cities, defaced our monuments, beaten old women in the street, shot police officers, and stolen everything in sight. It has nothing to do with civil rights. It's violence. They want segregation. You cool with that? Black Lives Matter believes in force. They flood the streets with angry young people who break things, and they hurt anyone who gets in the way. Our leaders are weak. Predators know it. That's why this is happening. If you let people spray paint obscenities on City Hall, pretty soon they are overturning cop cars. Maybe the U.S. government could take decisive action, and by doing that, make it really clear that this is a terror organization. Frog marched them in front of cameras like MS-13 and called them what they actually are, domestic terrorists. They did nothing to build this country. Now they are tearing it down. They are rushing us toward mass suicide. I mean, if your kid comes home after getting a bad grade or losing a game, you know, you don't let him smash all the dishes in the kitchen because...
Wait, they're rushing us toward mass suicide? You go first, fucker.
Because he's upset. They denounce their own parents. Imagine if the Black Lives Matter rioters had weapons and immunity from prosecution. That's what they're talking about. Partisan law enforcement. This is a sham. It was a front for tyrants to inflict their personal neuroses and their desire for control on the United States of America and to do it outside the democratic process. These people are not warriors. They are vampires. They melt in the light. What you're watching is the ancient battle between those who have a stake in society and would like to preserve it and those who don't and seek to destroy it.
Bull Connor could not have said it better. Lester Maddox could not have said it better. Strom Thurmond, Jesse Helms could not have said it better. David Duke could not say it better. George C. Wallace couldn't say it better. Because Tucker Carlson, and see, the difference here is that he makes these assertions, but he does not back them up with anything resembling evidence. Here, on the other hand, we are letting him speak out of his own mouth, with his own voice, in his own words, and provide the evidence for the assertion I'm making. Tucker Carlson is a white supremacist.
Some of our most prominent citizens have sworn allegiance to a cult. It is insidious. It will grow. Converts go by the term allies. Its goal is to end liberal democracy and challenge Western civilization itself. And like all cult members, they demand total conformity. And here's their first new rule: no criticizing Black Lives Matter. They ritually condemn their own nation, its history, its institutions, its symbols, its flag. Who will enforce the laws? Who will be in charge? Well, violent young men with guns will be in charge. They will make the rules, including the rules in your neighborhood.
Funny how a violent young man with a gun took charge a couple of nights ago in Kenosha, but it wasn't a member of Black Lives Matter. No, it was a militia wannabe with a list of priors as long as your arm, whose mother drove him from Illinois to Wisconsin. Enjoy your militia cosplay tonight, honey. Where he murdered two people and maimed a third. A 17-year-old with an assault rifle.
I think Black Lives Matter is poison.
Those people look like looters. But before you judge them, keep in mind...
Now, bear in mind what those people look like looters means to Fucker Carlson is those people are black. He never saw any of the video of the white people engaging in looting and property damage, or in point of fact, beginning the looting and property damage in Minneapolis. Remember, the guy with the umbrella and the hammer at the AutoZone, Colonel Mustard.
Mind, it could have been far worse. It's not like they were doing something immoral, like protesting Gretchen Whitmer's coronavirus lockdowns in Michigan. That would have been a different story. Is there a...
Oh, that was moral! When a bunch of dipshits from dipshit refugees from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention showed up at the state capitol in Michigan, carrying guns and threatening civil order, that was patriotism. Are we clear on that? Yeah, sure.
Reason the DOJ hasn't filed federal conspiracy charges against the people who organized and led these riots? Your protests are still illegal. They're racist. The ones destroying our country? Essential. Who are the people trying to take over your country, cancel your rights, eliminate our centuries-long tradition of tolerance, yes, tolerance, and of free expression?
Centuries-long traditions of tolerance and free expression. Isn't it interesting that just yesterday evening I spent a good half hour on Francis Scott Key and his tolerance for free expression? He was so tolerant that he indicted people for engaging in First Amendment free expression. Yeah. And it paid, Tucker Carlson, it pays him so well.
Why would people intentionally stoke race hatred? They're advocating for segregation, for racism, for the destruction of art, and for the destruction of books. This is a totalitarian political movement.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold the fuck on. You mean to tell me that that tacky-ass statue south of Nashville on the northbound side of I-65... of, I guess, what, Stonewall Jackson? That's art? One One person's nightshirts, another person's robe and hood, I guess.
And someone needs to save the country from it.
Jesus. And so that's the backstory on Tucker Carlson. Then came this.
That too. But first, outside the convention, chaos that began with the first George Floyd protests on Memorial Day has reached its inevitable and bloody conclusion. Last night, three people were shot on the streets of Kenosha, Wisconsin. Two of them have died. Police say they've charged a 17-year-old with murder. Here's what Kenosha looked like last night.
Fireworks. Oh, no, not firecrackers.
Two people died. Many of the details remain hazy. Big media organizations have done their best to downplay and ignore the violence in Kenosha and around the country. But there were a few reporters on the scene last night. One of them, Richie McGinnis of the Daily Caller, was standing nearby when a man was shot in the head. McGinnis ripped off his T-shirt and used it to try and staunch the man's bleeding. Here's the scene.
Those are rounds being fired from Herr Kyle Rittenhouse's AR-15, those pops you hear.
Get a light on it! Get a light! Get me a light!
Put pressure on it! Put pressure on it!
Where, dude? Where? Where's the hole?
Wait, where are you? Where? Here, in his head! In his head! Come on! Put pressure! Put pressure! Put pressure!
Put pressure!
Put pressure! Hey, keep your eyes open! Keep your eyes open!
Sorry for the painful video, but it's real.
Oh, yeah, he's so fucking sorry. He's doing that. He's doing that to inflame Emery and Marvelline, sitting there shaking in their shoes, perched in their matching Barca loungers.
That man later died. At one point, the 17-year-old, who has now been charged, tried to run from the mob. He tripped and fell in the middle of the street. A man ran up and smashed him in the head with a skateboard. The 17-year-old then fired his gun.
Not a single cop responds. Not one. Because it was a white boy doing the shooting.
So what does that amount to?
Warning. This ain't a hockey puck warning. This is a get the bucket warning. Because what you're about to hear is putrid.
We're unsure. A court will decide whether what you just saw qualifies as self-defense. As of tonight, we really don't have more details. We do know why it all happened, though. Kenosha has devolved into anarchy because the authorities in charge of the city abandoned it. People in charge, from the governor of Wisconsin on down, refused to enforce the law. They stood back and they watched Kenosha burn. So are we really surprised that looting and arson accelerated to murder? How shocked are we that 17-year-olds with rifles decided they had to maintain order when no one else would? Everyone could see what was happening in Kenosha. It was getting crazier by the hour.
Yeah, you just heard that. You really did with your own ears. You heard a multimillionaire right-wing broadcaster declare that it's okay for 17-year-old children to bring assault weapons into an already fraught situation and shoot people. Not to put too fine a point on it, but it's worth noting that, to the best of my knowledge, in only one jurisdiction in the entire United States, and that's Texas, is it legal to use deadly force in defense of property? That's it. The only people who can legally do that in other jurisdictions are, say, the National Guard, when activated by the governor or federalized by the president. And even the cops are not empowered to use deadly force in defense of property. In the case of Jacob Blake, they will claim they used deadly force in defense, in self-defense. But this is the root ball of fascism. The use of deadly force in support of property. And so, the hashtag Fire Tucker Carlson trended last night. And at some point in time, one of these fuckers is going to get so close to the advocacy for deadly violence that they're going to cross that line that has thus far protected the Rush Limbaughs and Glenn Beckerheads and O'Reillys of the world. Well, I had enough. My friends, there was no way I could have known that me bleeding and blathering about the liberals who are destroying America, because they are. My friends, there's no way I could have possibly known that some nut job would pick up a gun and go start killing liberals. I would argue that Tucker Carlson has crossed that line. He might actually be the person who changes the law. Because this is a textbook definition of stochastic terrorism. The use of mass media to inflame passions and, in fact, get people to engage in terroristic activity. This is that in all its bloody horror. Kyle pointing out, he tried to run after he fucking committed, you Nazi piece of shit, Tucker. God damn these pieces of fucking shit. Committed murder. He tried to run. Kyle adding, the Fox Terrorism Network needs to be taken off the air, and Tucker Carlson needs to be in prison. I agree. Not because I want to suppress free speech, but because it is perfectly legal in this country, and in fact is an ancient doctrine, to suppress incitement to riot. You think that 17-year-old juvenile delinquent with a juvenile record as long as your arm, you think he came up with all of that by himself? Because he didn't. Not by a long shot. He was goaded toward it every day of his life. On Facebook, in right-wing mass media. There's nobody on our side that I'm aware of. I mean, we've got some, there are some stupid people who broadcast under the banner of progressive. No sense in naming names. But there's nobody out there on our side encouraging people to take up arms. That is the province of the white wing. Plain and simple. David in South Carolina, Stan, on young Herr Rittenhouse. The cops let him get away, just like the cops did in Arizona and Austin. As I predicted, one day these cosplay soldiers are going to start firing live rounds from their military-grade weapons into crowds of people, and that's exactly what happened. Yep, David, it sucks being a prophet, unwelcome in your own land, doesn't it? Ron and Raleigh, subject line, with blinders on. From the 1898 coup d'etat in Wilmington, North Carolina, to the Tulsa White Riot, to the Rosewood, Florida destruction, and the over 2,000-plus lynchings and many other acts of murderous impunity, where not one white person was called to task or punished. Remember the German word I sent to you last week? Tucker wouldn't show his pasty face in any black neighborhood in the country. I'm sure he'll tell you he's not a racist. Yeah, and Ron, I'll add that he'll then go on to say, because I have a black friend. Young Attorney General Cameron of Kentuckistan. P.S. says, Ron, I assume we should just allow ourselves to be shot and killed and just take it. That's what they would like. And you just take it and you don't say anything about it. Or maybe you hold a prayer vigil in your little church. Murderous assholes. From Australia, Robert writes, somewhat incredulously, subject line bleeping. They bleep out the naughty words, but showing the video of people being shot is okay. Precisely. Welcome to Merca. Signed, Robert, in isolation in Oz, listening in horror. Welcome to our world, Robert. Welcome to our world. Subject line, Tucker Lee in New York says, I guess that Tucker just didn't know that the gun-happy teenager was not a Black Lives Matter Antifa member, but as noted by Crooks and Liars, a front-row attendee of a President Trump rally. Those evil liberals are everywhere! Oh yeah, the little prick is on video saying, well, my job is... Boy, you don't have a job. Little psychopath probably couldn't hold a job. And while I know last night Steve in New York said he believes in redemption, I don't know if you can redeem a Nazi. I don't know if you can redeem a white supremacist. My guess is the kid will be treated gently by the state of Wisconsin. He'll be tried as a juvenile. He'll be punished as a juvenile. And then maybe once he's done with his juvenile sentence, well, gosh, they'll just let him back out onto the streets. Another possibility is that once he's no longer a juvenile, he'll be transferred to a facility for youthful offenders. We talked about how many states have those. And serve some time there, and then the parole board will decide if maybe it's, well, he's rehabilitated. He's terribly sorry he murdered those two people in cold fucking blood and maimed another. Gosh, too bad. Let's let him out. They don't do that for young black men who make the same mistake. Those guys go out of the youthful offender program and are transferred to a big boys prison. I'm trying to figure out why, if a conviction can be had, and you know as well as I do, And we know that God made little green apples, and if you eat too much, you'll get a bellyache and the runs. You know he's going to plead self-defense when the video's right there and there's nobody near him. Hitting the head with a skateboard? Where's the video of that? David in South Carolina stand, Cruella. Cruella Conway said it was ridiculous to claim that the terrorist was a DT admirer. She blamed the report on the media. And I guess it's the media's fault that he's sitting there in the video in the first fucking row with a rapturous fucking smile on his face as though he's watching Jesus H. Christ himself deliver a speech. hooting and hollering and braying. Yeah. But it's not just Fucker Carlson. Not by a long shot. A segment like this just wouldn't be right if we didn't mention a few of the other usual suspects. How about Gateway Pundit? These people, this right-wing turd shop can have the calendar right in front of them and can't tell you the right day of the week. Facts are next to non-existent to them. They hyped the hell out of the shootings in multiple blog posts. Matt Walsh over at the Daily Wire tweeted, "People have every right to protect private property while armed." No, they don't. If you attack armed men because you're mad that they're stopping you from lighting buildings on fire, and then you get shot in the process, it's 1,000% your own fault. I shouldn't need to explain this. Well, I guess someone needs to explain to Matt Walsh that deadly force in defense of property is not legal. Over at The Blaze, that's the media toilet put together by the Beckerhead, Elijah Schaefer went on Twitter and said that Herr Rittenhouse, he was also protecting private property from criminals. And then went on to say he was a libertarian who said he was in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. Lie and lie. Then, of course, the Gun Humper blog, Bearing Arms, they said this. "Be armed and prepare to defend yourself and your home. We've seen protesters in other places venture into residential neighborhoods already, so don't believe for an instant that there's no chance of it happening. Based on what we see in Schaefer's video from Monday, they might even start shooting without even meaning to. So be ready." They spelled two, T-double-O, just in case anybody's wondering. Jim Hoft over at the Gateway Pundit thought it was terribly, terribly funny that people called for help after an individual was shot in the head. "Even the far-left cop haters want a police officer around when they need them." No, they were asking for somebody to help with a head wound, not a cop to make another one. There's no end to this sickness, and there won't be until we get active and end this sickness. But a bunch of these freaks are getting off on it. We don't hear from him nearly as much anymore, but Michael the Savage Wiener, Savage, the guy who once sent a postcard to his pal, Allen Ginsberg, explaining to him that he wanted to put his camera lens up Allen Ginsberg's fundament. Yeah, it happened. Well, they've been masturbating over a coming race war for so long that they think they're just... oh, so close, close, close. And consequently, the Savage Wiener.
"This is a very, very hard day in the United States of America. The young man, the teen, the 17-year-old, who was knocked to the ground by the vermin and defended himself in the war in Wisconsin in a..."
knocked to the ground by the vermin. I guess the vermin is Michael Savage Wieners, it word for his own tripped up feet. Vermin.
Gun battle. Shot two people. Has just been arrested.
Gun battle? Gun battle? It's not a gun battle when there's only one fucking gun. That's terrorism. Savage.
And charged with first degree homicide. Now, I don't know whether this kid is going to eventually get enough money together to defend himself, but I will tell you this. Armed citizens who are protecting Kenosha from, quote, thugs who are looting and such, this is just the beginning of the war that is going on. It's been a one-way war. Nobody wants the violence.
Except, of course, people who listen to Savage. Are you kidding? Nobody wants the violence? The entire right wing, white wing, is aching, yearning to start shooting. One of the stories we haven't talked about so much on this program, merely for want of time to get to it, is Idaho. Where the gun goobers have marched in. And literally broke down doors in the Idaho legislature. And not a single arrest was made. Not one. Nor are there any plans for it. Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-W-R. It's okay if you're a white Republican. Voices are speaking out. People are speaking out about what happened with young Herr Rittenhouse. Representative David Bowen of the Wisconsin House of Representatives. He's, among other things, he's attended racial justice protests in Kenosha. He said he witnessed firsthand how the white supremacist militias go after peaceful protesters and law enforcement does absolutely nothing. He was interviewed by Amy Goodman. She showed the clip of the cops giving the white supremacist vigilantes bottles of water. Interviewing Representative Bowen, he told Amy Goodman, "I literally witnessed firsthand a massive amount of organized white supremacists driving around in pickup trucks targeting protesters. And they were not there not they were there not to try to defend businesses as they make it seem. They were there not to attempt to get a point across. They were there to hurt people. They were armed and they were using chemical irritants. They were harassing protesters, and even from the video, it looks like they're in coordination with the Kenosha law enforcement that were there, literally. We are at this point in this state. We're witnessing the unfolding and the unraveling of the point of what we're trying to do in transforming the system, of transforming the way that we institute public safety. And this is Exhibit A and Exhibit B of why we need to transform law enforcement and public safety in Wisconsin and in this country for sure. People are not in this position of advocating for changing the system, only to be harassed and surveilled and targeted. They're in this position because they're tired of witnessing that we will end up with a future that is the status quo. And law enforcement have shown that they're more tied to defending the status quo rather than accepting change. Lawmakers that I'm trying to work with in the state capitol are refusing to hear the pleas for change from people. They'd rather try to blame and point the finger of why these things are happening after the fact. People are focused on really instituting change right now. And so, because the goddess of irony is watching this with an eagle eye, as Mike Pencil Neck Geek bleated about violence in the streets of our cities, it was actually quiet while he was speaking last night in Kenosha. She doesn't miss anything. Stephen, New York, wondering, do the likes of Stephen Miller, Michael Savage, and other collaborators who happen to be Jewish realize that if those they're collaborating with ever get power, those people will turn on old Stephen and old Michael and others in a heartbeat? The groups they're supporting don't have much of a history of being, you know, pro-Jewish. No, they don't. And so let's bounce back over to Savage.
We've been asking Antifa to be arrested. We've been asking the president to declare them what they are, domestic terrorists, along with their cohorts and the other so-called letter groups, the short letter groups. You cannot burn businesses to the ground in this country and not expect people to fight back. Well, it happened. It happened in Wisconsin. I don't know if you saw the video. Everyone has seen the video. Have you seen the other video? Have you seen the other video circulating on the internet that won't be seen in San Francisco or in other denizens of liars?
Just in case you're wondering, San Francisco, that denizen of liars, and I certainly wish the people and government of San Francisco would do something about this. Michael Savage Wiener lives in San Francisco. He brays and carps and complains about San Francisco, San Francisco, San Francisco. But for some reason or another, this New York City-born kid still hasn't gotten around to, moving to where? Birmingham? Montgomery? Dallas? Phoenix? No. How about Boise? No. Seattle? Mm-mm. No. Portland? Nope. Sorry. No way. He loves San Francisco. And, of course, his listeners are so dead from the neck up, they never quite make the connection.
Have you seen the Black Lives Matter thug punk vermin scum going into a restaurant and demanding that people put up their fists in solidarity with them, picking on women and children? And when the women and children wouldn't raise their fists in that black power salute, they threatened them. Did you see what happened in that restaurant? Have you seen the white thugs? Watch the aggressive mob of white BLM protesters threaten white diners, demanding they raise their fist and show solidarity with them or else.
Have you seen the videos of the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys and the Patriot Prayer Types using pepper spray, chemical irritants against people who weren't doing anything at all? Have you seen that? No, he's never going to ask that.
Jim Verde, the producer, said he watched the video with alarm, and it looked very much...
Whose alarm? He watched it with alarm. That sounds like a Muslim name. Alarm.
Like the Hitler Youth going around forcing people to declare loyalty to Adolf Hitler. Tell me the difference between the BLM protesters doing things like this and Hitler Youth terrorizing Germans in the 1920s. There is no difference. Meanwhile, breaking news again, if you just tuned in, the Wisconsin 17-year-old was arrested and charged with first-degree murder for defending himself. Now, if you look at the video, he was knocked to the ground by a thug who had a loaded handgun, a very powerful automatic weapon, semi-automatic handgun. He had him on the ground, and this juvenile was just charged with first-degree murder for the Kenosha riot shooting defended himself, in my estimation, by firing from the ground with a rifle. They ID'd the white kid in record time. The 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse was arrested almost immediately in connection with the shooting that left two dead and one wounded.
You lying sack of shit. He walked up to the cops. The cops didn't even get out of the car, so he went home to Illinois. Arrested almost immediately. But you see, the sad little aggrieved white wing pieces of shit who listen to Michael Savage, well, they're not going to question a word he tells them.
Because he's a radical truth teller. What?
Jesus Christ. Jude with a note. I called the Kenosha Police Department. I identified myself and where I was calling from. I asked directly why Jacob Blake was being handcuffed to his hospital bed, as I had read his father's duress today. In a flat tone, the woman responds, "Because he has warrants," not offering further info. I then voiced Bob with deep sorrow, "How tragic." She hung up. Jude kindly provides the number of the Kenosha Police Department. Area code 262-656-1234. Area code 262-656-1234. Thank you, Jude.
Because he had warrants.
One would think those would be public record. Gosh, I wonder what he's charged with. Bleeding while black? Theft of police lead? Stream littering. Oh, and along the way, how about a little Marjorie Taylor Greene update? She hates everybody. Turns out she shared an anti-Muslim video. Wait a minute. An anti-Muslim video that also says that Jewish people are trying to destroy Europe through immigration.
What, Edith, huh?
Well, she's just a good... She's a proper Klanswoman. She hates everybody who is not white, and Protestant Christian.
This is what the UN wants all over the world. Zionist supremacists have schemed to promote immigration and miscegenation.
And goes on to say that the Jews are at the heart of a project to destroy Europe as we know it. And they keep pushing this. They're going to outpopulate the white people in Europe trope. And time after time after time after time, sane and serious people have addressed that. It's not mathematically possible. There are whole books written about it.
There's a cabal of leftist capitalists and Zionist supremacists with the deliberate aim of breeding us out of existence in our own homelands. The forced collective suicide of European nations.
And, of course, it all starts over at 8chan. The online home of white-wing, race-baiting hate. And
because of course.
Well, we're halfway through the program, and we've got $135 to go on Charlene's challenge. If we can get $135 more dollars through the door, that's $135. That makes a total of $200 that Charlene will double and add another 50 to, which would go a long way toward knocking out the deficit we have so far this week. So please don't leave that laying on the table. Please, I implore you. Thank you, Charlene. Dear God, Jeremy sent me a photograph here of Frau Rittenhouse on the same night that her son murdered someone. She's dressed in camo, got a backpack, and, of course, she, too, is carrying an AR-15. Has that been verified, Jeremy? I'm not saying that I doubt you, but, And a reminder coming from David in South Carolina, Stan. Charlie Manson talked about a race war, too. And that's true. In fact, he thought that's what he was getting started with the Tate-LoBianco murders. And to much hilarity, there is a meme making the rounds on the internet that shows a man, a bearded man, in the Oval Office. It's all fuzzy. It's a portrait. And he's laying both hands upon the shoulders of Nitwit Nero, and Nitwit Nero, with his right hand, is reaching up to touch the left hand of the Savior who is watching over him. The most hilarious part of it is that the maggots who are falling for it don't realize that the bearded man in the white robes, and I don't mean like Klan robes, is Charlie Manson. Lee in New York, the savage wiener. So, falling to the ground, whether pushed or accidental, is reason to kill. Sure it is! As long as you're killing the right, wrong people. That's how the maggots roll. David pointing out, coincidental timing? Notice Nitwit Nero incites violence in battleground states. This is orchestrated for his campaign. Most of the arson, looting, vandalism was started by the Boogaloos. Fires are always attention grabbers in propaganda films. With Megan urging defund fucker Carlson, all caps. A homework assignment? Remember the clip? They're killing people, you fucking asshole. Jesus, fuck, I need hazard pay after listening to this. What a fucking idiot incel this man is. And no one's allowed to criticize BLM. Criticize the police and watch how zero to crazy these morons go. Adding, I'd like to know where the police are recruiting. I heard today Rittenhouse was part of a civil youth outreach program run by the Kenosha police. I suspect that they're recruiting from secret white supremacist groups. Which is a damned interesting point, because Sparky sent this article along from The Guardian. Dated today. Headline, white supremacists and militias have infiltrated police across U.S., report says. Well, I'll be damned. There's another thing that we've talked about for freaking eons. It being verified, a former FBI agent has documented links between serving officers and racist militant activities in more than a dozen states. The article is by Sam Levin in Los Angeles. Michael German, a former FBI special agent, who is an expert critic on how U.S. law enforcement manages to have failed to respond to right-wing domestic terrorism. He says that U.S. law enforcement officials have been tied to racist militant activities in more than a dozen states since 2000, and hundreds of police officers have been caught posting racist and bigoted social media content. Where, you might ask? Well, in his report, Michael German says that over the course of years, white supremacist and militia elements, right-wing militia elements, have been found linked to police in Alabama, surprise, California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Louisiana, Michigan, well, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Oregon, Texas, Virginia, Washington, and, yeah, here, West Virginia. You remember when the cop got killed in Dallas several years ago and was tatted up with enough white supremacist ink to send the folks at Stormfront into a masturbatory frenzy for the next year and a half? Sacramento police in 2018 jumped in bed with neo-Nazis to try to get charges against anti-racist activists. Some of those anti-racist activists had even been stabbed. Then there's the Orange County Sheriff's Deputy and the Chicago policeman caught wearing far-right militia logos. The Olympia, Washington cop who was photographed posing with a militia group. The Philly cops filmed standing by just while armed right-wing mobs attacked peaceful protesters exercising their First Amendment rights and journalists. The worst part of all this, according to former Special Agent German, is that nobody is collecting the data and nobody is actively looking for these law enforcement officers. But he has no doubt that their activities are often known within their own departments. Sometimes it results in punishment and termination if there's a public scandal. But this, and this matters, almost no police agencies have any explicit policy against being affiliated with white supremacist groups. Take a moment for that. Why in the fuck wouldn't you? Well, on the one hand, there's, it never occurred to us. I mean, we're sworn and beholden to uphold the law and the Constitution. Or there's the more terrifying likelihood. Well, if we enact all of those policies, we're not going to have a police department. So just as is the case with someone wearing that stupid red hat, if you see someone posting Blue Lives Matter on social media, you can just about take it to the bank that you're looking at the behavior of a white supremacist. Lou with a question. Out of curiosity, if COVID was disproportionately killing white folks, do you think the re-Trumpicans would be reacting to the plague more vigorously? Well, you don't have to speculate that on that, Lou. You can follow back on the timeline of the expansion of COVID-19, and you can draw a line on the graph at the moment where the stories come out that show that COVID-19 is disproportionately impacting communities of color. And I'm pretty sure that there are no, wear no mask, ain't got it, it's in the ADA, and you can't ax me because of the ADA, and the OSHA done said I don't got to, and besides, it's right there in the Constitution, right next to where it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I got a card. the anti-masking horse shit, the disdain for the spread of the disease tracks neatly, Lou. With the discovery it was that it was killing more black people and brown people than white. Thank you very kindly to Elizabeth. Elizabeth got us down to $100 to go on Charlene's challenge, and George, thank you, George. George came along and got us down to $75 to go. $75, and $75 more dollars, and we're done. We've met Charlene's challenge, and that will be tremendous. Thank you, George. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you so very kindly for helping to support this program's continued existence. No, no, Kyle, you're right, Ralphs. Kyle Rittenhouse was not originally from Wisconsin. He's an Illinois kid. And provides us with an article. Who is Kyle Rittenhouse's mama, Wendy? Well, according to the U.S. Sun, she's a nurse's assistant and the mom of Kyle Rittenhouse. They lived in an apartment just south of the Wisconsin state line in Antioch, Illinois. They say it's unclear that she drove him to the protest. There are photographs of her with her boy standing in a fake police uniform. What it boils down to is it's not immediately certain whether she drove her kid to the protests, but she can't be reached for comment. But we know that Kyle killed 26-year-old Anthony Huber and 36-year-old Joseph Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum. I wonder what kind of name is Rosenbaum. They're trying to get a crowdfunding campaign together to raise money for young Mr. Huber's funeral. They raised $60,000 in less than 24 hours. Describing the night that he died. On Tuesday, August 26th, Anthony Huber decided to use his voice and stand up for a cause that meant something. While peacefully protesting, Anthony selflessly tried to aid in taking down an attacker when he was gunned down. Anthony leaves behind a significant other and a stepdaughter. And Joseph Rosenbaum, well, he leaves behind a little 2-year-old girl who will never know her, who will never know her daddy. On the other hand, Kyle Rittenhouse got a cold bottle of water while the cops said, "We appreciate you being here." As to the report from Michael German, former special agent of the FBI, which is under the thumb of Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr, has thus far refused to comment. Because, of course, I said we hadn't talked much about the Idaho business. Well, ammonium nitrate Bundy was dragged out of the Idaho State Capitol in handcuffs because he stormed the Capitol because he didn't want to wear no mask. I ain't gonna wear no mask. It's in the Constitution. Yeah. The funny thing is, he had chained himself. Wait for it. Because the goddess of irony is a good goddess. He had apparently chained himself to a chair. Because, well, ammonium nitrate Bundy, he ain't going to take no shit from no cops. Well, the cops didn't pepper spray him. They didn't tase him. They didn't shoot him. But ammonium nitrate Bundy, being a Bundy and all, he is, how to put it, atne ute ait bre if you one what I in me. And so apparently he chained himself to a rolling chair. And so the police simply rolled ammonium nitrate Bundy to a cruiser and took him into custody. Yeah, nobody got tased in the state capital of Idaho. Nobody got gassed in Idaho. Nobody got shot in Idaho. Uh-uh. Nobody's been charged in Idaho. And it just so happens that in Idaho, the county where the state capital is a COVID hotspot. It's spreading in that county. But of course, the Patriots, seeing as how it's a Democrat hoax, ain't gonna wear no mask. And precisely nothing happens to them. Hey, considering that, this is just a question. Considering that these maggots take guns to a state capitol over a simple mandate to wear a mask and protect themselves and protect others during a pandemic, if a cop pumped 7 rounds point blank range into the back of a maggot while holding on to him by their t-shirt and left the maggot paralyzed, how do you reckon the maggots would behave? Would they be all peaceful and law-abiding considering they carry guns to state houses over masks? Or would they go to the nearest black neighborhood and burn it down because that's who the fuck they are? Not saying, just saying. He should have done what the police officer, what the kind, goodly kind police officer told him to do. and then the police officer would not have pumped 7 rounds point-blank range into his back.
No fucking way.
Arthur, haven't heard from you in a while, Arthur. Hope you're okay. Going back to the story about the anti-Muslim, right. Anti-Muslim? Anti-Moo? It wasn't Auntie Moo a character on a children's TV show? She was a cow? No. That's for you, Auntie Moo, Arthur. Flavio with a note says, Bob, the little shit juvenile militias were boasting we don't have non-lethal. That was Herr Rittenhouse in an interview. We don't have non-lethal, but I brought my med kit. Aw, did you bring a juice box too, Kyle? Dear God, is Kyle going to be the new catch-all name for little violent asshole gun-toting white kids? If it is, sorry, Kyle, because we have good Kyles in this audience. And, of course, since it was prayer meeting Wednesday last night, even the Republicans understand that. So, naturally, they hauled out the still semi-living body of Lou Holtz. Because, you know, Lou Holtz was the football coach at Notre Dame and all. Back last time Notre Dame won a national championship, and probably the last time they ever will. And Lou Holtz took to the podium to declare that Joe Biden was a Catholic in name only. Now, anyone who knows the life and times of Joe Biden knows that this guy is a serious Catholic. I mean, I have no doubt whatsoever that if Joe Biden, and I'm not making a sport of it, but if Joe Biden had been from that diocese in Michigan and found out that his last several, you know, 2 or 3 years worth of confessions were no good, and that maybe the extreme unction performed for Bo had not been good, or that a grandchild or a great-grandchild's baptism was no good, I have no doubt that it would be extremely upsetting to Joe Biden, because whatever else you want to say about Joe Biden, he is sincere in his faith. He has been a much more faithful church attender over the course of his life, God knows, than Donald Trump ever has been in his. And Lou Holtz has the nerve to stand behind a podium at the Cool Kids Conclave and declare that Joe Biden is a Catholic in name only. Well, even though he doesn't work for him anymore, and even though the last football team he coached was the University of South Carolina Gamecocks, Notre Dame felt it incumbent upon them to issue a statement. Notre Dame wishes to make it clear that it does not endorse what Lou Holtz said about Joe Biden at the Republican National Convention. Biden, a Catholic, has cited his faith as a constant throughout his life. Man, when even Notre Dame didn't going to put up with your bullshit. Yeah, I guess maybe Lou won't be going to any, won't be delivering any commencement addresses, I guess. Sheesh. Why can't they, I know, simpleton's question. Why can't they run a campaign without turning it into an exercise in sleaze and filth? You and I both know the answer to that before the last word was even out of my mouth. It's because it's what they have. It's because the only thing that will motivate a maggot is either hate or fear. Now, just because you clothe it in something that you want to call patriotism doesn't mean it is. They got hate and they got fear. That's why. John in PA with a question. I like our Kyle in Kentucky Stand. He's opinionated and isn't afraid to speak his mind. John asks, how old is he? Well, I really don't know, John. You know, we don't have membership rosters with birth dates or anything on them. So, but if Kyle wants to share, Kyle is free to share. Oh, by the way, just filling in a couple of little details here. Brother Deacon Asa says, it's not just the Jews, Bob. The entire universe is conspiring to put an end to the white race. Think about it. Given enough time, generations in the sun, you can turn a white crowd black. Why did God hate white people so much so as to place the sun so close to their kingdom? I know. But, hey, frankly, us pink people, we are an ongoing evolutionary experiment that seems destined not to be a success. When human beings first went up into Europe several thousand years ago, those were black folks. And it's only through migration to less sunny climes, wherein evolutionary biology made a bunch of melanin in one's skin not quite so necessary, that we sort of bleached out. Last science I read on it says that white folks are about 7,000 years old. Curiously, that's also the same number that the New Earth creationists use to delineate how old humanity is. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. That's when we show up. And blue eyes and blonde or red hair seems to be a diminishing evolutionary quality. And no, it's not because more moose limbs are going into Europe. The real reason for it is that from a genetic standpoint, this is not eugenic, this is just genetics. Blue eyes, green eyes, blonde hair, red hair. Well, those genetic tendencies are recessive as fuck. Because genetic traits are either recessive or dominant. So me, little old me, I'm a walking, talking bundle of recessive genes. I mean, in my own personal heritage, it's really weird. I mean, it's not so weird that it can't be explained, but it's odd. Both of my parents were brown-eyed. All four of my grandparents, however, pretty sure. No, not all of them. My paternal grandfather and my maternal grandmother, at the very least. I think my maternal grandfather as well. But three out of four may have been blue-eyed. I think Granny was brown-eyed. And the way it works is brown plus blue equals brown. Brown plus brown equals brown. And the only way you wind up with blue eyes is if you get the blue-eyed gene from both parents. So both of my parents were brown-blue combinations with dominant brown, and it just so happened they each passed on a blue gene. Blue genes? Ah, to me. And curiously, none of that has a goddamn thing to do with intelligence or anything other than a simple evolutionary question of dominant versus recessive genes. And then I married a green-eyed woman, and we have she's hazel-eyed. We have one hazel daughter, two blue-eyed daughters, and one blue-eyed son. So that means Agnes and me are both a bundle of recessive genes, her being a redhead and all, and me being the same. And I guess that means our kids are even more recessive. Kind of not a real compelling argument for white supremacy, is it? More like an argument for white recessivity. Ding, 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 ding. Sure do got a pretty mouth. Leah New York points out, recessive genes, my wife and I are brunettes. We have a redheaded daughter. And there we go. It's all just a crapshoot. Sure. Oh, and here we are in the third hour of the program. We've got no lack of material to continue for the third hour. If you want this to be a three-hour filibobster, that's cool. But this is, we engage here in what I like to call, and we've come to know as conversation radio. So if you'd like to jump into the conversation, you're mighty welcome. By the way, an apology. Last night, as I was talking with Steve in New York, somebody called in on the stress line. And this is where having a producer comes in handy. I got engaged in the conversation with Steve and totally spaced the caller waiting on the stress line. And for that, I apologize immensely. I do not know who it was. Sometimes I'll be able to mute the mic and turn the speaker on and find out who it is. But Steve was so earnest and so concerned. And, well, I sort of just sank myself in that conversation. So my apologies to whoever was on the stress line last night. If you would like to use the stress line and get into the conversation, that number's easy. 800 or 888. No. So many toll-free exchanges now. 844 the horn. 844-843-4676. 844 the horn. Or you can always use Skype because it works just dandy. And that, of course, is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N, on Skype. And so you're welcome to jump in. Ron, with a note, do you remember back in the day there was a blaxploitation movie titled Three the Hard Way, starring Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, and Jim Kelly? The plot of the movie is a group of neo-Nazis find a compound that specifically targets black people. When discovered, mayhem ensues. I not only remember it, I think I've seen it. I may have to go back for a review on that. Speaking of which, Agnes and I have just... We finished our rewatch of Star Trek Enterprise. And Agnes was deeply upset that that thing only made it four seasons. I think she's still pissed. The hell was wrong with them canceling that? So Agnes is in the distinct minority of people who thought that Enterprise was really good. I'm with her in that minority. The whole Zindi thing was kind of stupid. But if they'd have kept going, well, it was looking interesting. But they tied it all up in a neat little bow, and sent it on its merry way. But we've watched two movies lately. One we watched last night called Capone with Tom Hardy. And it was not a great film, but you have to respect the job that Tom Hardy did as Al Capone in the final year of his life. It was not, you know, we didn't feel like the time had been stolen from us. It wasn't great, but it was okay. The other one that we watched, though, that we enjoyed significantly, and, you know, when programs get back to being produced, you know, when production companies get back into business, back into production, it would be interesting to see if there will be a sequel or seven. And one gets the idea that there will be, especially because of the way it ended. The Old Guard. It's a kind of, it's not a superhero movie in the way that, say, the Marvel franchise is. It's sort of, I guess the way I would describe it is Highlander for two generations later with less thick brogues. There can be only one. But there are swords, and there's a pretty good plot, and the Old Guard are a group of immortals. But you can't kill them by cutting off their heads. Charlize Theron had the lead in it and did a good job. The whole cast was good. And it was nice to see that for a change, although it begins in some Muslim country, turns out the bad guys aren't the Muslims. It's a start. But it was engaging and held your attention. So, I guess I wouldn't issue a recommendation on Capone, but I would on The Old Guard. Take it for what it is. Have you ever noticed, Ron continues, I noticed some time ago how many actors are blue-eyed. Isn't that odd? If you haven't noticed, keep an eye open. See what I did there? Yeah. I'll keep an eye out for you. That's an old punchline. Gosh, I just got an email from Donald J. Trump.
It's almost over. Finally.
Unfortunately, it's a fundraising pitch. Are the maggots... I mean, here's what...
Bob, I emailed you. The vice president emailed you. My wife, First Lady Melania Trump, emailed you. My sons, Don Jr. and Eric, emailed you. Lara emailed you. And now I'm emailing you again. This is the final day of our epic convention, and I want to do something huge to commemorate the day I became your Republican nominee for president of the United States for the second time. I want today to be our best fundraising day ever.
Oh, damn. I saw It's Almost Over and Finally, and I thought, wait, is he resigning? Damn it, no. Missed it by that much. Yeah, me too, Arthur. I love The Old Guard, Arthur says. Good story, good plot. Okay, I confess, I wanted at least one Scottish accent, but that's me. Lee in New York says, Enterprise was far better than Discovery. The ratings were not there because there was too much Trek when it showed up. Now we have Discovery, Lower Decks, and Picard. Haven't gotten to Lower Decks yet. Ron's been encouraging me along those lines, but not yet. Ron points out, if Rockne S. O'Bannon had been the showrunner from the start, Enterprise probably would have made it a full 7 seasons. Making Vulcans a bunch of racist xenophobes didn't help. You know, that's curiously, welcome to Star Trek talk. Curiously, that's the one thing, that's the one plot twist I appreciated. It made them much more real. They had internal lives. They had, well, to use the Arabic word in its original sense, they had an ongoing state of jihad, a personal struggle within one's being. I didn't find that a deal breaker at all. Because I, you know, if you're a culture that comes in contact with another culture simply because they've developed warp drive, wouldn't you be a little cautious? Or would you just say, "Oh, here's every, oh yeah, we can trust you." And they did a good job developing the plot line for why they didn't. And even with Spock, I always got the idea that he thought he was a little bit better than everybody else. I mean, it takes a little bit of snottiness to look at the captain of a starship and say, "Captain, that is not logical." Well, fuck you and your logic, buddy. I'm captain, and you're not. Which is kind of a prototypically human response. But I think the character that I like most on Enterprise, and it's funny to be talking about it because it's been over for 16 years, was Dr. Phlox. That is one fine fucking actor. Probably the best actor on the program as far as I'm concerned. But that's me. James in Illinois says, I just watched Locke last night, not knowing the premise. Just anything with Hardy. Just the story of a man whose life is taking a decided turn for the worse. But it's fascinating watching the way he navigates his way through it. Well, I'll have to check that one out. Earther. Wowzer. Earther has taken us down to just $20 to go to finish Charlene's challenge. That's profound. Thank you. I cannot thank you enough. So $20 more and Charlene's challenge is met. And then Charlene adds another 50 to it. And so, one. And, yeah, so that'd leave us $135 to finish, to get even with this evening. And then nothing but our regular funding for fundraising goal for tomorrow. But that's huge. That's tremendous. Thank you. So maybe there's another $20 rolling around out there between now and 8 p.m. That would be wonderful if there is. Brother Deacon Asa, re the old guard. And I have to reluctantly admit the Arab music was mesmerizing. I thought, yeah, there was not a lot to... And the special effects, well, those were fantastic. And I don't want to give anything away, but it was good. And yes, apparently there's going to be a sequel. The Old Guard 2, Ralphs tells us. The Old Guard 2. And apparently it's based on a comic book. And is planned as the start of a trilogy. So that's encouraging. Thanks, Ralphs. Thanks a ton. Agnes will be thrilled to know that. Elbert in Rhode Island. I saw a Trump political ad recently. It talked about how Trump's going to lower prescription drug costs. It immediately made me think one thing. Why didn't he do it during his first 100 days in office? Yeah, why hasn't that already happened? You know, because
only I can do it.
But, you know, I read you the text of that stupid email.
I emailed you. The vice president emailed you. My wife, First Lady Melania Trump, emailed you. My sons, Don Jr. and Eric. What do we got to fucking do, Bob?
Do the maggots get these emails and think they're actually getting an email from Donald J. Trump? I just wonder, because I don't think I've ever fallen for an email from a political candidate. I understand how the fundraising process works in America's capitalist political funding system. But I can't help imagining Emery and Marveline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers, shitting their pants because they think that the BLM is going to come for their trailer.
Emery, look here. Donald Trump has sent us an email. Well, I mean, he sent it to me.
What do you want to bet that really happens? I mean, again, it's probably this is the second jerk reference of the evening, but it's like Steve Martin running down the, Naaman, running down the street, waving the phone book while wearing his bathrobe, yelling, "The new phone book's here! The new phone book's here! I'm somebody!"
I couldn't believe it. I was just opening up my email. I thought I was going. I was looking for a picture of the new twins from my cousin Chlamydia Jean, and there it was, an email from Donald J. Trump. As busy as that man is watching TV, and tweeting about what's on Fox, and he found time to send an email to me. The least I can do is send him $100. I mean, me and Emery can eat some of Tabby's meow mix for a month or so, but if he's got time to email me, I got time for him, and what's more important, I got money for him because I got to keep America great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Cynthia with a question. Did you ever see that One Season Wonder sci-fi series, Firefly? It was a great show with characters that I liked. Hell, I even liked the song they wrote for the show, which was a lot like Cowboys in Space. If you haven't seen it, it's well worth it. Oh, no, I've seen it. Agnes has seen it. Agnes takes things seriously. All I have to do is say to her, "Firefly." And she's good for 5 minutes of cussing whoever the fuck it was at Fox that canceled it. Well, those no good little shit eaters. The fuck? Best program they've produced in years, and they canceled it after one season. Bunch of assholes. Oh, yeah, we like Firefly here, Cynthia.
Meanwhile, Lee in New York says, "I dislike Dr. Phlox casually knowing what tribbles are. I do not like when things discovered were commonly known a century before. They all know Quadro Triticale, but not one of them ever heard of a tribble. Dr. Phlox seems to have read about tribble care and feeding."
Well, that's because, you know, he's a Denobulan, and that's part of it. They know that. But see, in the original series, instead of having a good alien doctor, they went with a cranky old anti-Vulcan racist in the form of Leonard Bones McCoy. And that's why they didn't know what tribbles were.
Ron's out there. Ron's fighting for the Vulcans. They'd overcome that part of their lives centuries ago. You can't make first contact believing you're better than everyone. A new Star Trek is coming, Star Trek Strange New World, starring Anson Mount as Christopher Pike. Timeline before the original series. Charlize Theron, the African-American, is the action heroine of our time. Sorry, it made me laugh. Ralphs reminds us, Trump said he was going to sign an executive order if the pharmaceutical companies didn't lower drug costs by 8/24, August 24th. Well, naturally, as Ralphs points out, I didn't do that. Shit, he probably can't even remember that he did it. But he said it. There's a new documentary out, Unfit, the Psychology of Donald Trump. And if I'm going to try to find it, but it's apparently terrifying. So keep an eye out for it. No telling where it'll pop up. Unfit, the psychology. It's actually hashtag unfit, the psychology of Donald Trump. Whew, might need a tequila bottle for that one. So, well into the third hour of the program, let's pop over and see what's going on with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, man, how's it going?
You know, it's not terrible. For a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
Well, oh, goodness. Well, I'm in a little bit of a pain watching the unraveling of the country that I once knew.
Well, yeah. Yeah, caller, I'd say you're right.
And, you know, I'm saying this because, you know, it's not about me all the time. I'm just saying my experience was going through my lens here as a Southerner now. I find, though, that it's interesting. A lot of Southerners may have never lived out of the South or more than 60 miles or 100 miles
away. Well, why would they want to?
Well, I'm just saying this in a clinical type of way because, you know, because I'm at the point, the things I hear are just crazy. Like from educated, you know, serious people. And then they're like, well, slavery wasn't bad. You know, my family I have it right here in these documents. They treated our slaves like family.
That reminds me of what you see on the wall when you walk into Bob Evans. I hate Bob Evans, by the way. Welcome to Bob Evans, where we treat strangers like friends and friends like family. And I remember one day we were in there, and I looked at Ferg, and I said, do you realize what follows from that? We treat strangers like friends and friends like family, and we treat family like shit.
Yep. Right. Because there's a backstory to that.
They can't. Bob Evans cannot make sausage gravy for beans. I don't mean that he would put sausage gravy on beans. I mean, they can't make it worth a damn. Yeah, that's some bad. Well, there went dinner in the Mountain Time Zone.
I'm just saying.
But it's like, I'm real snotty about it. No, that's not you. I'm real picky about my sausage gravy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Bob Evans is from over in Ohio, somewhere around Rio Grande.
Mm-hmm.
And not to sound like too much of an asshole, but Bob Evans sausage gravy always struck me as what somebody from Ohio would think sausage gravy tasted like. Jesus, I'm going to get email now. But it's not sausage gravy like you get somewhere else.
Is it the white sausage gravy or
no? That's the thing. It's like it's made with bacon grease or something. It's kind of an off coffee tan.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't right.
Well, they can't hold a candle to, you know, if you want to talk about celebrity sausage. You know, Jimmy Dean is pretty hard to beat for some reason. I can't figure out why.
How bad is it when Bob Evans' sausage gravy is worse than McDonald's? I mean, hell, Hardee's and Carl's Jr. have good sausage gravy.
Yeah, you read my mind, because I've had the Hardee's. Yeah, that's true. So, you know, since you're talking about food, have the people from over the gorge, have they set up camp in your yard yet waiting for you to come home?
No, not yet, and kind of hoping they don't, but, you know.
Yeah, that's just a joke. But, you know, so two things. Number one, I'm like, where are all these people? Why are they just now saying, I don't know, Donald Trump might not be psychologically well. I mean, where the hell have they been for the past 5 years? Or wait a minute. Let me stop there. More. No, this is part of what I called about. All this is related. So just because of the nature of my research now, you know, I'm not a researcher in psychology anymore. We're a different type of researcher. So, you know, I talk with people and help them find what they need, and I do a different type of research for exhibit. I have a new exhibit up, by the way, and it's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah? Care to share the topic?
Yeah. Well, sure. It's about black businesses in this area between 1926 and 1936. And apparently this area has always been a center of commerce, and it was actually shipbuilding here, even though it's just a river, but it, you know, because of it, the situation geographically, you know, nobody, this is like early, like 1899 to about almost 1900, because ferries were a big deal. Like if you had land on a river and you had a ferry, you were going to be a wealthy person.
Oh, no shit.
And
you want to know what a big deal ferries were? And we're talking about ferries, not fairies. down at the foot of the mountain, where the Gauley River meets the New to form the Great Kanawha,
mm-hmm.
there was a ferry across the Gauley River that was run by a fellow of the last name Kincaid.
Get out. Oh!
And somewhere along the way, the state of Virginia, I think this was before our statehood, somewhere along the way, the state of Virginia decided, you know what we need? We need a bridge across the Gauley River. And ancient cousin Kincaid said, like, fuck you, do. That's my living.
Right.
And so they came in and built one of those wooden covered bridges that, well, as it turns out, burned so pretty. Because ancient uncle or cousin Kincaid, well, I reckon he walked out in the middle of the bridge one evening with a bunch of maybe pine tar or some such, maybe turpentine, and just doused it real good. And on the way back, and if you were to shoot this as a movie, it would be a great moment. On the way back, just tosses that torch over his shoulder and woof, no more bridge. What's that? Oh, we just doubled the toll for the ferry. Yeah, damn right we did. In fact, I know it was before statehood because I think he burnt it down twice.
Damn.
Just like in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know, I said I was daft to build a castle in the swamp, but I built it anyway. It sank into the swamp. Built another. It burned down, fell over, and sank into the swamp, but the third one stayed up. Well, they built the bridge back for the third time, and that was good until the Civil War, when the Union forces done burned it down for cousin Kincaid. Here, let us help.
See, that's what you're talking about. I mean, I'm going through deed books and like primary sources.
Isn't that some fascinating shit?
Man, yes. People, listen.
That Spencerian copper plate hand. You know the handwriting.
Right. Well, right, and you know what? It's funny you brought up copper plate because I love that font. I use that font in my exhibit for the display, just because it commands.
Isn't it crazy what happens on this program?
we're all connected in some way, shape, or form. It's like a Faraday cage around. I mean, we just don't see it. But I'm telling you, So you look at some of the price of the ferry here. One of the main ferries, there were two. It was 50 cents in the early 1800s. That was a lot of motherfucking money.
Oh, speaking of a lot of money, that is a lot of money. Because in the midst of all the conversation we've been having about the Postal Service and you know, from time to time I've mentioned, oh, Emery and Marvelline are going to love spending $50 to send a first-class letter, you know, to send their power bill in, because Emery and Marvelline, they don't do computers real good. For some reason or another, I was taken with the idea of researching the Pony Express.
Mm-hmm.
It only operated for a few years. You know, what was it? St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2019 dollars, do you know, and this was at the height of their success to the extent that they had any, they never made any money. But it was a private enterprise that was attached to the Postal Service. At the height of their success, to send a 1/2 ounce letter to California via the Pony Express from St. Joseph, a 1/2 ounce letter, Todd, cost $142,019 to send.
What? No. Yep. The decimal point has to be off.
Nope. And it was actually closer to $500 when they got started.
Well, do you see that demonstrates how powerful the telegraph was?
Well, the telegraph, the telegraph in the Civil War is what put them under.
Right.
But they built this huge network.
That's a wonderful story, because that was the edge of the country, Missouri, right there. That was the frontier.
And
then you had to go all the way down around the horns and come up, and all that.
And the reason it was $140 at least for a half an ounce, that's $280 an ounce. That's weed money in 2019. I don't need to send the letter. I'm just going to get high. Was because that it was not only supporting the infrastructure necessary to run the Pony Express, it was supporting the capitalists at the top of it.
They had a monopoly.
Because, you know, capitalism is all about making the guy at the top rich.
See?
Yeah. By the way, you got a note from Ron and Raleigh. Todd, I love you like a brother, but Jimmy Dean's makes horrible sausage. The only sausage that passes my lips is Gwaltney's from Smithfield, Virginia. Bass also makes a pretty good sausage. Gwaltney's bacon's pretty good as well. Gwaltney is good bacon. I use a dash of nutmeg in my sausage gravy. I am black pepper, hot pepper, and a little rub of sage. But nutmeg would be nice.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Nutmeg would be nice. You know, nutmeg's nice in the bechamel sauce that you make as the base of a true good macaroni and cheese, too.
It is, and it has that type of, when you use it in the right proportion, it's there. It's like celery. Like, if it's not there, you know it's not there, but it's the hint. It fills in a flavor gap, you know? Like when people really understand flavors, it's almost like a oscilloscope, right? You have hills and valleys, and certain spices fill in gaps.
Yeah, you get the nutmeg. The nutmeg's a little spike on the oscilloscope.
Right, exactly. But I have, you know what, Ron? Ron, I feel the same. I mean, Ron ain't no joke.
Well, I won't buy any old Jimmy Dean sausage, because I know what a right wing piece of shit he is or was.
Well, I feel bad every time. My father would be like, you're buying that. I remember we had it one time when I was little, and it was, you know, because there's not a lot of oil left, you know. But there are other sausages. But it just, around here, I don't have a lot of choice.
Well, do you know what the trick is with ground sausage and those little plastic rolls? And, you know, right now the vegans and vegetarians in the horn community are going, but in order to make sausage, you have to work some fat into the ground pork. You know.
Yes. Yes.
So if you read the labeling information on the roll of sausage, the percentage of fat, that one data point will tell you everything you know you want to know about the quality of the sausage inside that roll.
Well, that's what I'm
saying. Because the higher percentage of fat, the less sausage you're actually going to eat, and the more that's going to melt away in the skillet.
I must have eaten a ton of guacamoles when I was in school, and my housemates and I, because, you know, we'd stay there over vacation, and we had $5 a piece for like a couple of weeks. We got pancake mix, sausage, some syrup, potatoes. I mean, we were just great.
Gotta get the spuds. Yep, I know it well.
You know what I mean? It's some onions, and we made the potatoes.
Oh, if you've got onions, if you're like a starving student, and you've got a bag of potatoes, some onions, and a green pepper, and some bacon, you can eat and live for a good week or two.
Right. Oh, then we got the 12x12. Two of those of eggs. They were cheap. It was like 99 cents a tray.
Yeah, that's those small little banny eggs.
Okay, yep. But somehow we made it. Man, this is something. You know, food culture, politics, it all. But so this is what I was wondering. I mean, a couple of things. But, you know, we just have, we're going to have some issues here. It's so much going on. You know, I don't understand why so many of our fellow Americans don't understand the importance of Black Lives Matter now. What is it going to take? You know,
I was out and about today, and I heard a little bit of National Petroleum Radio. Mm-hmm. And I heard one statistic cited that 37% of white folks surveyed support and approve of the goals and message of Black Lives Matter. Well, mm-hmm. I'm part of that 37%. The white members of the Horn Family Community Congregation are largely, I would guess, part of that 37%. But as a pale pink person, I want to look at my fellow melanin challenged and go, what the fuck is wrong with you? You can't see this? Do you realize what a hell-raising frenzy you would create if your kid was on the receiving end of being choked to death or having 7 rounds pumped into his innocent back?
There's a cognitive dissonance there. It doesn't connect. And see, I have a patron, and he's a lonely old... I don't want to get too specific. A regular, okay? So, and he's a researcher, you know. I'm not going to get into his biography too much more, but...
Yeah, don't.
So, all right. So, you know, and I don't talk politics at work, but, you know, he brought it up. There's no one else in there. And I was like, okay. Oh, and it's great. Okay, because, you know, I'm Tangent Man. So this is what I wanted to say about...
it's Tangent Man! Able to divert criminal masterminds with a simple change of subject.
Oh, since you brought up bread. So after this latest thing with in Kenosha, you know, and then listening to Washington Journal, you know, there are a lot of folks out there. And I'm not going to get into ethnicity because it's bigger than that. But it really is about ethnicity. See, the old code was when a white person tells you something to do on the street, you're supposed to do it. And we have a whole cadre of people who still believe that here and maybe other places. And, you know, that's an authoritarian view, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So they believe in law enforcement. But I don't. This is the argument that I hear a lot of people using, and they just don't care. Because so I said to him, I said, "Well, I said, look at you know, and the classic example obviously is Dylann Roof, but we have more now. But I'm like, well, okay, we have this. Like, I can bring you binders of people who have been you know just shot down by police for some infractions, no infractions, you know, different things." But at any rate, it meant the police lost control of the situation because we have a justice system for a reason. You're supposed to bring people in. And, you know, it's like people, they get hot-headed. And here I go off on a tangent a little bit. But you see, this is what, when I saw that tape of the most recent incident in Kenosha, I've been arrested before. And I'm an educated person. I'm a very middle-class person. And, you know, they are hotheads. And what happens is that they get pissed off. If you don't do exactly what they tell you to do, they get upset. So they expected that man to comply for whatever reason, and he didn't want to. And so that's resisting arrest, no matter how well you cut it, you know, no matter how you cut it. And I get that. But you have a whole group of folks in this country who believe, well, he should have just done, like you said, he just had done what the police tell him to do. And he would have been fine. And then it's like, okay, but he got shot dead in the back. So what they're saying is that, you know, our lives aren't really worth shit anyway. So the Venn diagram would indicate that then when you question some of these jurors, like in Ferguson, one woman in particular, well, he was going to do something bad anyway. And the same with Trayvon. So, you know, we're seeing black, especially black.
Oh, I saw some asshole on social media make the argument recently. George Zimmerman only killed Trayvon after Trayvon had beaten him half to death.
What?
Okay.
I mean, there's just an entire, they build their own reality around these things. It's like something I saw last night, and I just kind of had to walk by. I saw a maggot say, "I always ask my liberal friends, what has Donald Trump ever done to you? Hurt feelings don't count. Crickets." And that took some self-restraint because, you know, it's taken a lot of years, but I've learned that the prize for winning an argument on the internet is getting to say that you've won an argument on the internet, thus not of any particular value. But the urge to say, oh, okay, I got it. I understand now. Being a Trump voter, you don't know the difference between hurt feelings and moral outrage.
Right. And they don't even get it that they're working on feelings because the facts would indicate that this man is really hoodwinking them, and they don't even get it. And see, after all this shit that we're dealing with, you know, and here comes tangent, man. See, this is a ploy. This whole thing, that's what I'm saying. The power elite, you know, C. Wright Mills' power elite, they had planned all this shit. And I'm saying from Obama, they predicted this backlash because they wanted a permanent 20% tax cut. So they put this mentally ill fascist, you know, they allowed him to get
death yam.
See? And nobody's talking about that. And it's going to be hard as hell to pull that 20. Imagine everybody across the country, people who work, like you and me, you know, everybody.
Oh, no. It was there at the Cool Kids Clavern. They're going to tax the middle class to death.
The only thing Joe Biden said is we need to lose the tax cut for the billionaires. And curiously, there's no small number of billionaires who say, you know, he's right. Didn't need it in the first place. I mean, hell, everybody's like, God damn it, why is Michael Bloomberg talking at the Democratic National Convention? Well, you know what? One of the most valuable things he said was, Donald Trump gave me a tax cut that I didn't fucking need.
Didn't need it. See? That tells you how much disgusting money. Because remember, and see, and here's the connection. You look at the Business Week, you know, all the business magazines and you know, with that side of things.
Why, you know, why? They're even admitting it. Well, the stock market just keeps going up. So, you know, they just move money around. They live on interest. Like a lot of people here, they live on interest. They're happy. Man, they're really set now. Are you fucking kidding? Stock market over 25,000? What? They made a killing. They're set. You know what? They're set for two generations already, and they just are getting started. So that's the one side of this equation. And the other side, remember, Donald Trump said he loves the undereducated, and he's giving them the hate, the freedom to hate that they always wanted.
Yeah.
You see? And, and they all live in the right places to vote. They all live in the right places to vote. Where their vote counts more because of this corrupt ass. Because
they get to cast it.
And they get to cast it. Because St. Louis, let me tell you something. That shit in fucking St. Louis, that was criminal. If I'm wrong, because I know Brother Deacon Nathan knows, because I don't, look. I worship knowledge and that, look. So. I think it was over almost a half a million. How many hundreds of thousands of people voted at that one place or tried to? I mean, it was some good God awful.
Yeah, dude, crazy ass number.
And that's not New York City. I mean, it was multiple hundreds of thousands. I'm thinking it was like 500,000. Now, somebody can correct me. It was so outrageous where it stuck out. You know, it stuck out. But, so, you know, that's the ploy. And now everybody's all hyped up. You got people killing each other, you know, like this that young kid. I mean, what the fuck this is? So anyways, right, back to the baby. So I said to him, I said, well, you know, look at Dylann Roof. You know, what happened to him? Now everybody knew what he did. They saw it. He didn't even know he got taken for fast food. He didn't know anything about it. He claimed he didn't. I said, okay. I said, well, you know,
I know. I saw another jackass referring to black men murdered by cops as clowns. Well, if the clowns would have done what they were told, they'd still be alive. How can you guarantee that? If the clown would have gotten in the car, he'd still be alive.
Right.
George Floyd got in the car and had a massive panic attack. Doesn't matter to them.
See, that's what I'm saying. The system, the police are out of control. And this is what I'm saying. They have to, you know, we have to demand from the federal government that police departments keep better records. We can't have this little localized bullshit because these people have power over people's lives. And it's not just the killing. It's the lying. It's the flaking. It's the misconduct. And see, you brought up a good point. You see, a lot of these folks are affiliated with, I'm going to breathe.
Letting go now?
I hear Tracy saying, hey, better breathe, pal.
Wait, did you just do your Tracy voice? She is so going to kick your ass.
Well, she keeps telling me, she's like, she's so done. You know, and I mean, you know, in a perfect world where people understand how to maybe take their biases out when they go to work, and some police are able to do that. Some people are really able to do that for some reason, but most people are not. And especially when you're talking about undereducated people with a lot of power. They have a gun, a badge, a car. They can, you know, they break that report up and that's it. They go to court and, you know, you're going to, you know, whatever. Better have some money. And, you know, this cannot continue. What is it going to – and so – and I'm not – you know, I really want to say some – what some people might be might term terrible things. But, you know, what – only an insane person would just stand there and continually be kicked in the head.
Yeah, got the gun, the badge, the car, and the under 100 IQ.
So, you know, it's just a bad situation. It's really awful. And this man, and in the past few days, you know, you really have been. I've been listening when I can, and you've been on fire. You really have. That's all, you know, I can say. It's just, I don't think that you know, going back to like another patron, he's like, well, my people were good to their slaves. So I said, oh, well, that's great. I said, but do you think that's an outlier? But they treated him like family.
Yeah, what? Whoa. And you know that how? Is there an old family Bible with notations of nice things they did for the slaves?
I mean, they got primary sources. You know, these people around here have, these families go back way, I mean, and that's true in their letters, and I'm looking at the deeds and how they traded, what they did.
And today we gave an extra ration of bacon to Uncle Jemima.
Right.
Gave an extra ration of bacon to Uncle Jemima just because he'd been such a good and faithful servant.
Well, you know, even moving forward, I have friends here from when I used to visit as a young person, and they had black, quote-unquote, mammies. They loved it. I mean, like, they really, like, wow.
Yeah. I don't know what her skin color was, but my first college roommate when we first moved in told me in a moment of profound homesickness, he said, "I miss my maid more than I do my mother."
Mm-hmm. See, so this is a common theme. Okay. Well, it's not an outlier. All right, I'm not gonna say it's common, but yes.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, a couple of pieces of mail rolling in. Subject line: Tangent Man. Earther says the first edition of Tangent Man was printed in Germany in 1867 to reduce the spread of lice in school kids. Yeah. And Clarence wants you to know. Tell Todd I'm in Lugoff on my way to Bethune on US 601 North.
Oh shit. Clarence, watch that intersection right in front of Big Latte, Big Lot and Walmart.
Big Latte.
Come on, they're trying to be upscale now.
I knew somebody a long time ago who said that she shopped at Jacques Penney. Hey, I got a little good news. Since we're running out of time. Hallelujah Glory. Charlene's challenge has been met. Thank you very kindly to Les. Thank you to Les, and thank you to Lou. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. So Charlene's challenge has been made. And then I had a note from Jeremy who says, if we can get $50 worth of new contributions from new people in any combination, I'll put $50 on the table for tomorrow night as well. So on the overnight crew, if you've never contributed to help keep the horn on the air before, if there's $50 worth, Jeremy will put $50 on the table for tomorrow evening, Friday on the front porch. And
that's a great deal.
Yeah. And so it doesn't have to be one person with $50. It can be 10 at 5 or 5 at 10, et cetera. But Jeremy would like to bring more people into the merry little band that helps keep this program going for so many people. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very much.
Jump on. That's a beautiful thing. Because people come in and come out and they come back. And you know, I don't know what Mrs. Baker is doing, but I always found her inspiring. So I had some bad news. My car, it I was taking someone to the doctor. I had to turn around right where Clarence is. I had to turn around and come home because the car wouldn't. It was like, da-da-da-da. And I knew
that's an expensive noise.
So thank God the interest rates, right? They're low, right? So, but the good part, here's the good part. After thorough deliberation, I said, well, we're going into 2021. I said, I would feel like a shithead and I would feel stupid. Stupid, as they say in West Philly, 52nd and R.
Stupid.
Stupid. You got to put the SH first. Right. You did it.
That's so, SCH because it's German.
Wait, see? That's what I'm saying. The event is coming. There's going to be a black label ticket for the viewing. And everyone will have their own little turner for the pages because they're thin like a Bible. I'm talking about the Oxford Dictionary.
Yeah.
You know.
So anyway, I broke down, man, and I got a hybrid, and I'm telling you, man.
What kind? Got to know what kind. Toyota?
Yep.
Prius?
Yep.
Good deal.
No.
I got a sedan.
So, but only because I did the research. It's really safe, you know.
You're going to love it. And the time you spend not pumping gas is going to be delightful. Just out of curiosity, down there, because it's been my experience passing through there on a number of occasions. Just out of curiosity, what is a gallon of gas going for down there? Because I get the idea they practically give that shit away in South Carolina.
It's like a potato. I could bring a raw potato in and give me 4 gallons.
I got a potato. Can I have some gas? Oh, sure. Ain't got no taxes on it.
Matt, you got some cars? No.
We'll fill your tank up for a parsnip.
But, you know what? I thought you were going to get into the cultural thing because they're not popular around here.
Oh, no. You're a sissy commie pinko. Black Lives Matter, Antifa, America hater for driving a hybrid in South Carolina.
But here's the kicker, though. I was going to go cheap, but American ones, they didn't have good reliability, and Toyota, they've been doing this for 20 years or more, so I was ready. But when you in the sport mode, both engines kick in. There is no, you don't lose any horsepower. Matter of fact, it's faster.
Wow.
So I'm just playing. Yeah, and the oil, you change the oil once a year, like 10,000 miles a
month. Yeah, the car we had to replace the Mazda with last fall, it's not a hybrid. It's got a four banger and a turbocharger. And Jesus, and I think that turbo, but it's great. When you want that punch, it's there. You can hear there's that little bit of turbo lag, and it spins up. But the problem is, you can't stay out of the damn turbocharger. No matter how hard you try, I think that fucking turbocharger kicks in when I'm trying to parallel park.
Yeah. It wants once you get it going, it wants to go.
You started something. Arthur just said, "You got change for a potato?" Well, hell yeah, I got 4 Brussels sprouts right here.
Don't nobody want them know-how.
Wait a minute. Don't nobody want them know-how.
Now, Mr. Haney beat it off in a minute now. Now, you can trade him in.
Oh, that one hurt. That one hurt. Woo! Damn. And by the way, you got a note from Jude in the Great Northwest. Todd, it's a limbic cleansing. He helped me remember this powerful system, and it has assisted in my walk. See how you touch people, Todd. You touch people.
That's beautiful. I'm just going to say one thing about that. It's so funny. Because I heard you talking about, how Trump is all in. And see, what got me into neuroscience as opposed to just psychology is it's cutting edge. But Ford did the best he could. He didn't have the opportunity to know the structures. But he did a damn good job. Because that's your id, is the limbic system. And, he didn't know that the prefrontal lobe is what, is supposed to guide you. And I'm just concerned, man. This is basic knowledge, really.
Well, I know. And Emery and Marveline are sitting there living exclusively on their amygdalas,
Right. Exactly. They're all brainstem and reptilian.
No higher brain function at all going on. Okay. We're right at the end of things, but just to toss this part in for consideration, he's going to have his coronation speech tonight, and they must have 200 rows of folding chairs out there on the lawn of the White House. Holy shit. They're not socially distance spaced, and the only people required to test are in the first couple of rows nearest Nitwit Nero, and there are no masks required whatsoever.
What the fuck is wrong with those people? This is all. Do we not? I mean,
well, it's going to be a super spreader event. They're going to be sitting there just. Oh, they're just so proud. They're proud as punch. They're right there. They're watching their god emperor, and he's gonna beat the shit out of that Joe Biden, because that Joe Biden, you know, he's corrupt. Joe Biden corrupt, and they're gonna be turning to each other, and they're gonna be breathing all over each other, and spraying shit, and reaching over and touching, and saying, "Don't you just know it?" And they're gonna be LARPing and smollicking and lollygagging and grabulating all over one another, and hugging and a kissing, and probably speaking in tongues. Jesus Christ. And every last bit of it is a great big giant whopping big violation of the Hatch Act.
That's what I was going to ask you. They are, you know, what in the hell is, but you see, they don't care. This is the base doesn't care. They may know, and they just don't care. It's okay. Like you said, the Republicans, the IOR, whatever. That, right. And that's the authoritarian. In other words, the laws are for other people. They're not for us. That's to keep those other people in line. Wherever, I'm not just, it's not about ethnicity. It's just those people. Now, this shit is serious. I deal with this shit I put my life in danger every day. I love my job, but damn, I'm in like people are pissed off. And as soon as they don't see me, I'm not a security guard or anything. I'm like, I'm a researcher. First of all, they're irritated when they see my fucking face, some of these people, because I don't belong there. And then with this mask thing, they have taken this on. And that I will never forget that. It's just two things. I know you got to go. That it was amazing, like a mirror image, when the stable genius suggested that people ingest chemicals into their caustic, toxic, poisonous chemicals into their body. That exact same percentage that support them, the core of the base.
You're talking about toxic, sure. Ingesting toxic chemicals. You are a man of a certain level of experience, Todd. Mm. Have you ever taken a shot of, say, Bacardi 151, you know, the pink cap?
Mm-hmm. 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 That's burned like hell. That was the last time I did that.
Yeah, that's just rough.
I won't say the last time.
That's 75. Yeah. That's 75% alcohol. In order to get the antiseptic effects of alcohol, I guess within the body, it has to be at least 120 proof. That's 60%. So, I ain't got it in me. No, and we started something, Todd. We started something. Randy in PA says, I'll see your potato and raise you an heirloom tomato. An heirloom tomato? Why, hell, that's worth it. No, I ain't swapping you no heirloom tomato for no potato. That's at least two potatoes. Three potato more.
Vegetables are currency, goddammit.
But heirloom tomatoes is valuable.
That's about
it. It ain't like no damn Brussels sprout. Don't you be bringing your fucking zucchinis in here into the Rippy Mart, Todd. You ought to know better than that. Ain't nobody wants a fucking zucchini. Everybody got a zucchini. Probably one of them big ass zucchinis done turned all to woody pulp and shit.
Oh, God. That's too funny. I'm glad we can laugh.
We have to. Oh, and by the way, since you're on the line, Jack in Shreveport, no sooner had he written in to say, no, everything's been good so far, than his internet service provider, you know, corkscrewed into the earth. But about a half an hour ago, he got his internet back. And subject line, Washington Journal. Good God, it's been a sewer recently. Right-wing callers telling everybody what Dems do and what black people do, but you can tell they've never listened to either one. And then the special guest, Amy, that represents some kind of Women for Trump organization. She got her experience to run that organization by being one of the Tea Party Patriots founders.
dumb as a bag of rocks. Wait a minute.
Yep.
That's for you, Jack, in the middle of a hurricane. She says the BLM protesters deserved the harsh treatment from police, National Guard, or whatever. She based that on the fact that when she protested with the Tea Party, they never had the police on them for violence or looting. Oh, and yes, the number of callers starting out by saying they'd been Dems all their life, but they don't recognize the party anymore, so they're voting for Trump. You know what? I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. I love the cluelessness of thinking that the cops never descended on a bunch of teabaggers walking around with signs saying, if Brown can't do it, Browning can. And get your hands off, get your government hands off my Medicare, and threatening all manner of violence and carrying on. They think that the cops never messed with them because they were peaceable.
What? See,
that's some privilege, that white privilege.
But this is the space. This is what I'm going to ask, because this guy was nice, you know, and I'm going to try to help. I'm just going to, you know, he wants to have discourse, so another patron. But this just go in general. This is the time and space for pedagogy. In other words, ask people questions so that maybe they'll make that data point connection. Say, well, why is it okay for that person to walk around with a loaded weapon on the street and no one harasses him, and then the police actually aid in his, let's not say escaping, his leaving the situation, because if you say escaping, that's too much of a loaded word.
Absenting himself.
Absenting himself, right, exactly. Now, insert, you know, black man who maybe he looked suspicious. He had a counterfeit bill 2 days ago. And he won't stop. We told him to stop walking. He looks like somebody we need to talk to. And he ran, and then he stopped, and then he went to do something in his pocket, and we had to shoot him. Turned out he was going for his wallet, but he should have just stopped. What, you know, what is the difference between those situations? You have to ask people questions. And when that shut down, there'll be a moment where they just shut down. Some people. They'll just shut the fuck down, and they'll be like, they'll hit a wall. Because if they admit that...
You getting an attitude with me, boy? I don't want no attitude.
Well, look. And I would have to be attitude, bitch. You go to church, don't you? First Baptist?
Ooh! Ah, damn. We're over time, but, man, we could do this for an hour or more. You know, one of these days, Todd, you got to jump in on the front porch.
I'm getting a new phone soon, and I was banned from. I couldn't navigate, but they wouldn't let me on Skype. So, but I have to get a new phone because my phone's not going to work pretty soon.
Well, you know, you can always call into the stress line. That's there too. Shorty in L.A. says Todd's right. The plan was in there. Does anybody in the Horn family remember how all of a sudden the last couple of Republican presidential candidates pulled out? I think maybe three of them left on the same day. So there's Trump standing there in complete shock that he was the only survivor. Later, instigating Trump starts talking shit, but when he was voted, it took him forever to come to the podium to give his speech. There's that.
Interesting. And Bob, I don't know if you, and I know you got to go, but you know, I don't hear anyone. Even in Washington Journal, they touched on it, but you know, that bipartisan new report, it's not new anymore, it's about maybe a week old.
Oh, you mean the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report?
Yes.
That says that everything we thought about his campaign is true? That he was up to his eyeballs?
Yes.
He was so up to his eyeballs in Russians that it's lucky he wasn't pissing borscht?
So this is my question. Did the for-profit media on purpose not correctly preface this whole situation? Because everybody's not into politics like we are. They maybe don't understand that the Senate Select Committee, I'm calming down, they are privy to all the, like, the big secrets. They can't talk, the shit they see, they can't even talk about it. Like, they know what they saw. They know the evidence.
Well, see, you're making a fundamental error here.
Whoa.
in the, especially where you're talking about television, not so much print, but definitely television.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are millionaires for talking in front of a camera, from like outside the White House or out in the Russell Senate office building or where the hell ever, they're millionaires because they look good on TV. I joke about me having a face made for radio, and it's true. I could never be one of those TV people. I'm not perfect enough. They're not there because of their piercing, incisive intellects. And besides that, they never get enough time to actually make the point. For instance, this morning, they're over there on my filthy morning habit. They're talking about the fact that the Milwaukee Bucks said we ain't playing, and the NBA canceled the playoffs yesterday and today, and they might come back tomorrow. We don't know. And from the Washington Post to MSNBC and multiple data points in between and out and about, what the basketball players did was described as a, and I think I even used the word, and shame on me for not knowing better, a boycott. No, you boycott Chick-fil-A. These, despite their millions, were workers. Okay?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
And the only thing a worker has in terms of bargaining power is the ability to withhold his or her labor.
And when
a worker withholds his or her labor, we have a special word for that. And, well, Mika, that word is not fucking boycott. That word is strike.
Sorry. You know, okay.
But the well-groomed, pleasant to look at people on the electric TV machine, well, they befoul their very expensive underwear at the very mention of the word strike, because they are inside the belly of the beast, and they know, as sure as they know that their own mamas loved them, that strikes are bad.
Okay, but
ever since Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers of PATCO, America has been taught, and even before that, America was taught, strikes bad. I mean, this is Frankenstein stuff. Fire bad. Strike bad. Bad when working person not agree to give self to boss for free.
See, we're in a bad place, and you, boy, that's a shame. And you know, I think the whole country, we didn't know how much it was going to change when Reagan got in. But black folks know the rate.
Oh, hell, they knew the minute they saw him on the TV talking down to the Neshoba County Fairgrounds in Philadelphia, Mississippi. They knew, because they knew what went on down there, and they knew, and the black community knows a damn white dog whistle when they hear it.
But the white people, listen, our friends knew, all of us, we know. See, this is what I'm disappointed about. I have a feeling now it's going to take so long, and Americans will never know the racial harmony that there was before Reagan. We were really on the upswing. We were on the upswing.
Yeah. And let me add one more thing, and it's a goddess of irony thing, Todd, in relation to the strike issue. The National Labor Relations Act gets passed under FDR, and they have to spend a long time in the wilderness, but they had a list and they were ready. And when the Republicans came back into power in the 1950s, the first thing they did was take a ball bat to the National Labor Relations Act with something called Taft-Hartley. And among other things, Taft-Hartley makes so-called wildcat strikes illegal. And courts have not hesitated to pass injunctions against unions that engage in wildcat strikes. Well, here's the irony. What the NBA players did and what the Major League Baseball players did, you know, the Dodgers stayed on the bench last night.
Right.
Those are wildcat strikes. And I just want to see some maggot piece of shit try to haul LeBron James into a federal court and have a and tell a federal judge to tell LeBron James to shut up and fucking dribble.
You're touching on a lot of issues here. I know we're going to go.
Sometimes the conversations are what brings out the best points. And that often happens when you and I are talking. But we're.
I want to ask you one question.
Yeah.
Why can we not expect more from these multi-million-dollar talking heads? I mean, fine. I don't look good on TV and pictures. You know, I know that, and everybody has a lot in life. But can we at least demand that they have a command of the English language? Because what they're supposed to be doing is communicating.
Oh, don't. No. Right? No, because you get me going on that, and we'll be midnight getting off air.
I'm about done with Mika, man. I'm about done with Mika. She is just a little too flaky, man. She has got to, I don't know, she needs tutoring. What the fuck? You brought it out because there was a slash, like boycott slash strike. No, and you fleshed that out in fucking two sentences. Why it's not a boycott. I mean, come on, man. There are beautiful people out there who are, you know, find these people who are intelligent and beautiful. I mean, I'm not trying to be, flaky, esoteric, all that, you know, but if that's what they want and that's what people like, you know, not no Fox News fake shit. That's just too much. But, so that's something we need to think about, man. We have to demand more. Americans have stopped demanding things. We are the country. Like the post office. These motherfuckers are making this argument. The post office is in the Constitution. It is not a business. It is not supposed to turn a profit. It is not even supposed to break even. That has nothing to do with it. It's supposed to get the mail where it has to go in a timely fashion, whatever it costs. That's the fucking bottom line. And I would encourage everyone to go to the National Archives for anything you need to know about facts about this country. The National Archives. That is where...
Can't beat those primary sources.
Okay. Yep.
Hey, Todd, we're out of here, man. I could do this all night.
I'll see you, man.
We'll talk soon, man. You have yourself a good weekend, you hear?
Yes. Yes.
Enjoy the new enjoy the new fly hoopty.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see you, man. Later.
All right.
Our buddy Todd closing out the program. Hey, I don't think I'm mistaken. I think half of Jeremy's challenge got met, and that coming from Christopher, a Christopher I don't remember seeing before. So thank you very kindly. $25 more as far as the overnight crew is concerned. Brand new contributors, though. Can't be anybody that's ever done it before. And Jeremy will be good for a challenge tomorrow night. So thank you. Thanks a ton. And that means that we're down to 110 to catch up even with this evening. So that means 310 for tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to all of you who answered Charlene's challenge this evening. That was tremendous. That takes a lot of pressure off tomorrow. Monday's already taken care of. Hopefully, well, we should be able to finish tomorrow evening for Friday on the front porch. At least I hope so. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky. Thank you, Sparky, and thanks to Steve. In the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Hey, hot and fresh, Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. It's a matter of about, 40 minutes or so, right there on headon.live. And stick around. You know, you can even use the horn chat room if you want to for a truth seeker. meeting house. More than welcome. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. We've crossed 180,000 deaths, thanks to Nitwit Nero, COVID, Caligula, Corona, Claudius. So if you can stay home, please stay home. If you can't, please wear your masks, wear your gloves if you got them. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Use your hand sanitizer. Take some with you everywhere you go. Maintain your social distance. And if somebody comes toward you saying, I got to go to the president's speech Thursday night, and it was just wonderful, avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.